Good evening and welcome everyone to the regular meeting of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency Board of Directors for February 15th, 2022. And with that, I'd like to call the meeting to order and ask Director Cooper if he would kindly recite the pledge for us while we all of us stay muted and say it silent to yourself. Dr. Cooper.
I would be honored. Thank you. Ready? Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Director Cooper. Now for our announcements for tonight's meeting. This meeting is being conducted pursuant to the provisions of AB 361. Board and staff, please mute all of your devices until you are ready to speak to avoid feedback, echoing, and background noise. Make sure you unmute when speaking and remute when you are done speaking. All board members, please turn on your cameras during the meeting. Staff, please turn on your cameras when speaking and turn them off when you are done speaking. Board members should use the raise hand feature in Zoom when requesting to speak during action and discussion items. I will call on each of you when it is your turn to speak. Members of the public may comment as to items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the agency that are not on the agenda during item three. Members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in this agenda may do so at the time each item is considered. We will be having no closed session tonight, so public comments are not necessary for closed session. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raise hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. Please do not turn on your camera unless you are speaking during public comment, and then please turn them off when you have completed your comment. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called upon by the last two digits of their phone number or by name. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. When you are finished with your public comment, staff will re-mute you. Please be familiar with the last two digits of your phone number. Procedures for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from board members. Once concluded, I will ask for a motion and a second. After any further discussion, the board secretary will call the roll call votes. The board secretary will be doing attendance by roll call, and each action item will be considered and will be taken by a roll call vote. Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll for attendance?
All directors, please unmute your lines. As I call your name, please say present. Director Osohofsky.
Present.
Director Atkins.
Present.
Director Cawley.
Here.
Director Kelly.
Present.
Director Ford.
Present.
Director Armitage.
Present.
Director Bronstein.
Present.
Director Plambeck.
I'm here.
Director Cooper.
Present.
Vice President Mortensen.
Present.
Vice President Gladbach.
Present.
President Martin.
I am here.
Back to you, President Martin. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We now move on to item three, public comments. Members of the public may comment as to items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the agency that are not on the agenda at this time. We ask that members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in this agenda do so at the time each item is considered. Members of the public, we know closed session, no need to announce that again. Madam Secretary, are there any public comments under item three?
There is. Ms. Noltmeyer, go ahead and hit *6 and you may begin your public comment.
Cam Noltmeyer. Yes, I had a quick question. I've been watching most of your meetings, as you well know, and I listened to the one where you were getting ethics training, and it was kind of abruptly stopped at the end. And I listened very closely, and the only thing I think that could have been prompted that is that the issue of a cloud came up. And my question to the board is, apparently you do have a cloud, and I can't understand why a water agency would have a cloud. So there are a number of ways you can have a cloud. It's private, public. I just want to know, your cloud, is it private or a public cloud? And why do you have it? There doesn't seem to be any reason for a public agency such as the water agency to be hiding things up in a cloud. I don't think it does much for people being comfortable with you and that they really know what you're doing and what you're up to. So I would like a reply to that if possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Noltmeyer. We have a public comment from the line ending in 739. You may go ahead and begin your public comment. Hit star six. Person with the last. Mr. Petzold, is that you?
Yes, this is 739.
Yes, go ahead, Mr. Petzold.
Yes, good evening. This is Steve Petzold, and I hope that you got the various pictures and correspondence that I sent in. I went to the city's Parks and Recreation meeting, and it certainly sounds as if the city of Santa Clarita is in line with doing a disc golf redesign. And I would like to just beg the SCV Water Agency to work cooperatively to help expedite this redesign. I don't know what the problems are between your agencies that this has to take as long as it has at this point. So I would like to have a report to hear exactly what are the issues on the table. Right now we're playing 18 holes on one design for nine. And as the summer and the spring come around, we are all playing on top of each other. Disc golf is an environmentally sustainable sport. And I would like to see it promoted here in the community. We need to get that redesign done. As I understand it, the city has hired a consultant. So if you need to form an ad hoc committee, a Central Park ad hoc committee to meet with the city, please form that ad hoc committee and let's get this show on the road. It's very important to the members of this community. Families use that. It's used by the Parks Department for tournaments. And we just we want to get that done. So please, I'm imploring each of you individually and collectively to support the disc golf redesign and instruct staff and the director to take all possible action to make that happen in an expeditious manner. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Petzold. Ms. Dunn, please hit star six and you may begin your public comment. Ms. Dunn, please hit star six and you may begin your public comment. Ms. Dunn? Ms. Dunn, hit star six and you may begin your public comment. Try this one more time. Ms. Dunn, go ahead and hit star six and begin your public comment.
Thank you. I have done it. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, wonderful. They keep unmuting me and muting me, and this is the Zoom people. I don't know what's wrong with their system. But anyway, the reason I'm calling in is because I heard Cam Noltmeyer's question about the cloud, and I am concerned about that, too. I would like to hear an answer as she also wants an answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Noltmeyer. I mean, thank you, Ms. Dunn. Is there any further public comment? Seeing none, back to you, President Martin.
Thank you. To respond to two public comments tonight, I don't know whether Chris Perez is with us yet. I know he's on the agenda to be here. Is Chris in attendance? If he can if the question was specific enough to you for you to respond to, if you can provide a quick response, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. Yeah, I was I didn't quite understand the question, but the cloud, it's a general word we use nowadays for remote computing. So a cloud is just someone else's computer that's not physically in your building, and that's the transition of modern day technologies that are evolving, that they're moving towards cloud based systems. So it's not our computer. It's a computer that's off site remotely. If that's the question you're asking about the cloud.
That's fine, Chris. It's not a Q&A, so thank you for your response. All right, you're very good. All right, we can now move on to item 4, approval of the agenda. I would entertain a motion for approval of the agenda.
So moved, Planbeck.
Motion by Director Planbeck. Do we have
second,
a second?
Armitage.
Second by Director Armitage. Are there any public comments to the agenda, Madam Secretary?
There is not.
Very good. Is there any further question or discussion by the board? Seeing none, we have a motion and a second. Madam Secretary, please call the roll for the vote.
Will all directors please unmute your devices? As I call your name, please state how you vote.
April, let me back up a second. As I recall, we don't need a vote for approval of the agenda. Is that correct?
Oh, no, we do not. That's true. We do not need a motion or a second.
I'm sorry for leading you down the wrong path on that one.
I just followed right along.
So seeing no additions or modifications to the agenda is hereby approved.
Other than the fact that we pulled items 13 and 14.
That's correct. We will not be having closed session items as listed.
And all directors, please remute your lines.
Very good. Old habits are hard to break sometimes. So with approval of the agenda, we can move on to item 5, consent calendar. We have 7 items on the consent calendar tonight. I would entertain a motion for approval of the consent calendar. Motion by Director
Cooper. So moved, Director Cooper.
Do we have a second?
Second, Atkins.
Second by Director Atkins. Do we have any public comment on the consent calendar, Madam Secretary?
We do not.
Are there any questions or further discussion by directors on the consent calendar? Seeing none, Madam Secretary, please call for the vote.
Now, will all directors please unmute your lines? As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Osipowski.
Yes.
Director Atkins. I'll come back to Director Atkins. Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Planbeck.
Yes.
Director Colley.
Yes.
Director Ford.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Kelly.
Yes.
Director Atkins.
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen.
Yes.
Vice President Gladbach.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. The consent calendar is approved, and that includes resolution numbers SCV-253 and SCV-254.
Thank you, Board. I did want to give a shout out to staff for staff participation in item 5.6. Thank you for the work that they did that saved us some money in the contracting consulting field. So thank you, staff, for that. So with that, we move to item 6, action items for approval. We have 4 action items. The first one is item 6.1. Authorize the general manager to enter into an agreement with Terra Verde Energy for application preparation and project management of self-generating incentive program projects, parentheses, photovoltaic and battery storage funding. Before we go to our presenter, Matt Dickens, I would offer it to General Manager Stone for any opening remarks, if you would like to do so.
Oh, thank you very much, President Martin. Just to note, this is the result of a fairly lengthy effort where we retained Terra Verde to work with our staff to screen potential grant eligible projects down to the ones that had the best return or payback and potential for being successfully implemented with site constraints, et cetera. So Matt is going to present the recommended small group of projects to move forward and implement, as well as seek grant funds.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. With that, Matt Dickens, our presenter, please proceed, Mr. Dickens.
Thank you, President Martin, and members of the SCV Water Board of Directors. Can you guys hear me okay? Very good. All right, so tonight I'll be presenting on SCV Water Self-Generation Incentive Program projects, as briefly described by General Manager Matt Stone. Next slide, April, please. Tonight's objectives for this presentation include recommending the authorization of the General Manager to enter into agreement with Terra Verde Energy for application preparation and project management self-generation incentive program projects, photovoltaic and battery storage funding. I will describe the self-generation incentive program, provide an overview of feasibility assessment process that we conducted with Terra Verde, provide an overview of the SGIP projects as we have outlined them in the concept phase, and then provide an overview of the Terra Verde Energy SGIP application and project management support scope of work. And then we'll conclude with next steps should the board choose to move forward. Next slide, please. All right, so turning to the SGIP overview, we have the self-generation incentive program was funded by the CPUC through various different energy utilities with about $813 million through 2024. Southern California Edison received $280 million to fund the self-generation incentive program. And some funding also went to the gas company. There is a base level incentive that is for projects that up to about 10 kilowatts, about 35 cents per kilowatt hours, the base level. Then there's a couple of adders, and those adders can be mixed. There's a resiliency adder, which is developed in support of CPUC Tier 3 fire zone, of which most of our service area is resides. And then there's an equity adder, which is designed for disadvantaged communities. And then you can mix those two for a third or fourth incentive by the resiliency equity adder. So when we look at the energy resiliency and battery storage objectives, our goal was to conduct analysis of nearly 200 SCV water appurtenance or energy accounts in facilities throughout our service area. We were looking for cost-effective projects and those that provided that not only reduced demand, but helped the agency achieve resiliency. And then we wanted to identify projects that maximize the incentive funding as designed by the SGIP program. In terms of energy resiliency and battery storage feasibility analysis, we contracted with Terra Verde Energy to conduct the cost-benefit analysis, which incorporated up to the minute electric meter data, interval data, so that we could identify demand profiles, look for potential photovoltaic opportunities and optimal battery sizing, and where we might be able to stack or bundle photovoltaic and battery use. Next slide, please. So after looking at the agency's nearly 200 sites, our phase one groups distilled down to about 8 sites, those that had the base incentive, the resiliency adder, and we had one disadvantaged equity resiliency adder. However, that project was determined to be technically non-feasible. But in addition to the phase one estimate, we worked with operations and our engineering folks to identify an additional 12 sites that had battery backup critical criteria analysis to determine if there was more opportunity for cost-effective projects. Through lengthy discussion, looking at agency resources, available space and footprint, we were able to distill down to about 2 sites for the self-generation incentive project that we think were ideal and optimal. That essentially, again, met the cost-effective site availability, resiliency, and resource intensity objectives. Next slide, please. So looking at the 2 sites, the first site is the Earl Schmidt Treatment Plant, where in the right, we can see an aerial a photo and a concept drawing, if you will, where the blue shaded areas would potentially house photovoltaic panels. And the green little box there would be where the batteries would be stored in conjunction with that additional photovoltaic system. We're looking at this site at about 680 kilowatt DC photovoltaic system. The battery storage would be about 928 kilowatt hours. That's a fairly sizable Duracell. The project cost estimates about $1.9 million. The SCHIP estimate is coming in at about $459,000. For the solar offset, we're looking at 87%. And what that means is that the solar generated from this facility could cover about 87% of what the historical data for Earl Schmidt was showing. So that's a sizable amount of energy off solar offset of energy demand for the Earl Schmidt facility. Annual best demand would be about 1,311 kilowatts. So that would provide not only backup during outages, but we could leverage the photovoltaic system as we propose here to maximize demand reduction, but also to maintain resiliency through PSPS events or other types of outages to remain to help that facility remain operational during those events. The battery backup at 24 hours is about 3%. That's assuming that the solar this photovoltaics were achieving optimal production. And that's 24 hours on a peak demand day. The savings term for this project is about 25 years, and the payback is identified with the cost, and the SGIP project is about 14 years. Next slide, please. For the Rio Vista treatment plant, we're looking at adding battery storage to our existing 4.5 megawatt photovoltaic systems in Castaic 1 and Castaic 2. The battery storage would be about 2,000 kilowatt hours. This project costs about $1.16 million. The SGIP estimate is about 87% of that cost at a little over $1 million. The solar offset for this facility is about 42%. The annual battery storage, battery use demand, about 4,338 kilowatts. Battery backup has 24 hours at 4%. Savings term is 15 years based off of the useful life of the battery. And the project payback with the SGIP included is about 4 years. So pretty good pro forma in both projects. Next slide, please. So, the staff report that I provided in tonight's presentation, we did receive a contract proposal for services to support the SGIP project from Terra Verde that has three different phases. First phase is the SGIP application. The second phase would be develop the technical documents for RFP, bid documents for potential RFP. And then the third task in the scope would be support of the project through completion of construction. In addition to the 220 that we have in the scope from Terra Verde, this recommendation would provide $73,806 or 5% of the estimated value of the SGIP incentive as a reservation requirement to reserve those funds. That is 100% refundable should the agency choose not to move forward with that project. In addition, there are other items that the board should be aware of regarding timing and the current status of the SGIP funding, available funds, as well as potential tariff modifications from the California Public Utilities Commission. First, the CPUC is considering adoption of the proposed net metering 3.0 tariff, which based off of the language that was provided and posted by the CPUC, it disincentived and changed the incentives for solar development that might make the program not quite as lucrative for the agency or as well as others seeking to install solar or choosing solar development. However, if we were to get the project in, reserve the project and apply for the service for the project, we could reserve it under the NEM 2.0 application. However, since this presentation was developed, the CPUC has temporarily paused any forward or decision making on the NEM 3.0 where they're receiving public feedback. So it's basically delayed until further notice. However, it should be noted that, as I mentioned before, SGIP funds were distributed through Southern California Edison, other energy utilities, including gas company. The SCE funds have been fully or nearly extinguished. But for these both these projects, since they have natural gas accounts, we could apply for the SGIP funding through the gas company. Next slide, please. So our next steps is in February. Here we are today. If the SCV Water Board of Directors approves authorization, we will procure Terra Verde Energy Services based off the scope of work they provided. We will immediately reserve those funds and prepare our SGIP application. And then we will turn to developing those request for proposal documents. And part of that process would include vendor contract negotiations. We would come back to the board in June once the RFP was developed and solicited and we received proposals for board authorization to move forward with the construction phase. And then we envision, should the board authorize construction at that time, June through March 2023, we'd have implementation management construction. Next slide, please. So in conclusion, staff recommends authorizing the general manager or recommends that the SCB Water Board of Directors authorize the general manager to enter into agreement with Terra Verde Energy for application preparation and project management for the self-generation incentive program projects as stated here tonight. Next slide, please. Thank you. At this time, I'd be happy to answer any questions the board might have.
Thank you, Matt, for your presentation. Excellent, as usual. Madam Secretary, do we have any public comments on item 6.1 before we consider board questions and discussion?
We do not.
Very good. Then we can open up for board questions and discussion. Or I see Director Planbeck, you have your hand raised.
So I'm really excited about this project. And one of the things that I think I think that he didn't mention the fact that if we have these public service shutoffs and we have a backup generator that's also storing energy, and we've not only saved the money from storing energy with solar panels, but we have that backup if the electrical company turns the SoCal Edison turns the electricity off. I think that's invaluable. And I think that that's something that really didn't get mentioned. Also, there was so much pushback on this solar tax that I don't think the Public Utilities Commission is going to get away with it. I don't know if you saw the demonstrations and everything else. So it was a crazy suggestion. I think they need to fund, not that helping low-income people with their rates is a bad thing. I mean, we're trying to do that too, or figure out a way to do that. But they have to promote solar. So this is a really good move on our part, I think. That's all.
Thank you, Director Planbeck. Director Armitage.
Thank you. I am also supportive of this idea to promote the use of renewable energy. And I do appreciate the unique perspective and the history that Terra Verde has in collaboration with us in other work that you listed in the memo. I guess I'm just a little bit concerned that we don't really have a way to know if the $220,000-ish is a fair fee that they're charging, since we don't have other bids. So if you could just speak to that, that would be helpful.
Yes, thank you, Director Armitage, and I appreciate both comments from yourself and Planbeck. And just for clarification, it's like it's Dickens, like Charles Dickens. easy to remember. So we did sole source this contract based off of legacy work or this scope of work based off of legacy work and knowledge that Terra Verde brings to the table. as well as Terra Verde's, it should be noted recently that Terra Verde received preferred provider status from the Association of California Water Agencies. So although that concern is, generally speaking, that concern is relevant to sole source contracts. In terms of the work for that they provide and they've provided us, those seem to be, fairly reasonable and in line with the historic work that they've done for us. And the second piece is that there are a few vendors out there and consultants to provide this level of expertise. So I hope that provides some clarity to the director's comments.
Thank you.
All right. Are there any other questions or comments or discussion on this item from the board? I agree with Director Planbeck. This is a worthy project, and I would entertain a motion for approval of the recommended action.
Motion so moved, Director Ford.
Motion by Director Ford. Do we have a second?
Bronstein.
Second by Director Bronstein. We have any further discussion on this item? Seeing none, hearing none, Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Will all the directors please unmute? As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Cawley.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Kelly.
Yes.
Director Ozahofsky.
Yes.
Director Atkins.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Planbeck.
Yes, and Matt, I apologize for saying your name wrong. I know better. I don't know where my mind was. I'm sorry.
Director Ford.
Yes.
Vice President Gladbach.
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item passes.
Thank you very much, board and staff. We move to item 6.2. This is to approve the 2022 legislative platform, and our presenter tonight is Kathy Martin. Ms. Martin, proceed.
Thank you, President Martin. Good evening, everyone. As we do each year about this time, we are bringing forth the legislative platform. This has gone through the Public Outreach and Legislation Committee and comes to you for consideration for approval. The legislative platform serves as a guideline for our staff, as well as our legislative advocates, as they seek to respond quickly to legislation or efforts by coalitions that come up that we may want to support or oppose. It's something we can quickly refer to, have consensus already from the board that this is a direction that we all agree on and lets us act quickly. Typically, there has not been many changes, but based on some action we had in legislation this last year, we did add item 11, an item on water rate assistance, which is on page 127 of your packet, or 5 of the legislative platform, where we just offered that it is our policy support legislation that's relevant to developing a statewide approach to water ratepayers assistance programs. There are also a few other changes from the previous year's platform, and those have all been highlighted in yellow. I am happy to answer any questions you may have about this program.
All right, we're going to try to do this in the right order this time so we can entertain board questions, and then we will go to public comments. We have any questions from the board? Seeing none, Madam Secretary, do we have any public comment on Kathy's presentation?
We do not.
Very good. Now we can entertain board discussion. Is there any further discussion on Vice President Gladbach? You have your hand raised.
Thank you, President Martin. This was presented at the Public Outreach and Legislative Committee. And we got, as Kathy mentioned, some good comments on it. And I think it's a great program, platform, and I therefore move adoption of the motion.
Do we have a second on Vice President Gladbach's motion?
Armitage.
Armitage. a second by Director Armitage. Any other comments or discussion from the board? With that, I would like to thank the work of the POL committee on this and the staff. And Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
President Martin, Vice President Mortensen has his hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dan.
Thank you. Yes, I just I think it's a little outside of our purview to legislate an expansion of the welfare state, and I will not be supporting that.
All right. Any other comments or discussion? Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Will all the directors please unmute? As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Kelly.
Yes.
Director Plambeck.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Ford.
Yes.
Director Ozuhofsky.
Yes.
Director Atkins.
Abstain.
Director Cawley.
No.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen. Vice President Mortensen?
No.
Vice President Gladbeck?
Yes.
President Martin?
Yes.
This item does pass. Thank you.
Very good. We can move on to item three. This item is to approve a professional services agreement with MTech Consulting Services LLC for Oracle Managed Service. Our presenter tonight is Rochelle Patterson. Rochelle, please proceed.
Hey, good evening. The Oracle or BAM or FMIS project, they're all one and the same, has been our long project where we have combined all of our accounting and financial systems into one program. It began early in 2019 with a needs analysis and assessment, demonstrations by several vendors, and an RP process. The implementation team was selected in April of 2020, and the project began in June of 2020. It was a delayed start due to the uncertainty of COVID. At that time, we're thinking that by that 2 month delay, it would help us with some, be able to travel and have our vendors come to us. But of course, that didn't happen throughout the project. So especially as a new software project, ongoing support is required in order for the system to operate as intended, troubleshoot issues, and develop enhancements. In the first 2 months, and three now of the POSCO Live Managed Services, the agency has averaged about 130 to 135 hours of needed support per month. As noted in the board report, and as you are probably aware, we have a complex fund structure consisting of four funds, three blended component units, 25 budgetary departments, six departments for project accounting, and two interfaces, one for OpenGov, and the future interface with Inquesta, which is our utility billing software. The Oracle system also manages inventory, has a fully integrated procurement module, budgeting within the system, narrative reporting, the general ledger, accounts payable, fixed assets, cash management, and a lot more. A majority of these features were not available in our legacy finance systems. We anticipate the need for managed services and will be necessary at the existing level, about 125 hours monthly, in order to provide incident management, plan support, root cause analysis, enhancements or modifications, account management, Oracle ERP quarterly update management, and general support. But could potentially reduce to 100 monthly hours in the second and third year. The second and third year monthly hours can be reduced to less than 100 if we find we are not needing the service level that we currently have proposed. Staff is recommending to enter into a contract with MTech Consulting Services as the lowest bidder for a 1-year cost of $235,884 with 2 1-year options at $181,884 per year. The cost for this fiscal year, the remaining months would be March through June, would be about $78,628 and would be funded from the technology services budget. The F&A committee recommended that the board of directors authorize the general manager to enter into a 1-year professional services agreement with the option of 2 1-year extensions for Oracle managed services with MTEP consulting services for a total 3-year amount of $599,652. And that completes my report.
Thank you, Rochelle. I'm going to have to correct my previous correction. It is our process to take public comment before we entertain questions and discussion. So, Madam Secretary, do we have any public comment on Rochelle's presentation?
We do not.
Very good. At this time, we can entertain questions and discussion from the board. Do we have any questions for Rochelle or discussion on this item? Director Kelly.
I noticed that two bids were extremely close and the actual bidder chosen was not the low bid, even though it was only about $1,000 difference. So I'd like to know why staff's recommendation was this bidder versus the next closest bidder. And obviously we didn't take the low bid, so that has no bearing on it.
I believe we did take the low bid. Let me pull the item.
Looking at the numbers in the report, it references total on the first year of $235,844. Yet the next individual, item 3, was 279, 249. So am I misreading something?
I have, so if we take just the 100 hours on page 131 of the packet, it was.
Yeah, my apologies. I can stop you. My apologies. Okay. I looked at the 100 column versus the 125 column on the two specific people. So I apologize with that. And go ahead. Thank you.
Are there any other discussions or questions from the board? General Manager Stone.
Thanks. Great opportunity just for a quick public service announcement. With professional services procurement, it is not a bidding low bid process. It is a proposal and an evaluation of the best qualified proposal that will exercise the work. In this case, happily, it was also the lowest cost. Thanks.
Otherwise known as a professional services agreement, qualification-based selection. All right, so with that, I would entertain a motion for approval of this item. Oh, I see during Dan's hand, you have your hand in the air, Vice President Mortensen.
Yeah, MTech is our current provider, and I understand the staff is happy with them, so I'll move the proposed action.
We have a motion by Vice President Mortensen. Do we have a second?
Second by RJ.
Second by Director Kelly. Is there any further discussion on this item? Seeing none, Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Again, will all directors please unmute? As I call your name, please state your vote. Director Planbeck.
Yes.
Director Ozahowski.
Yes.
Director Kelly.
Yes.
Director Colley.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Ford.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Atkins.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Vice President Gladbach?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen?
Yes.
Vice President Gladbach?
Yes.
Thank you. This item passes.
Thank you.
Did you get my vote, April?
Did I not say President Martin? Oh my gosh, President Martin.
All right, let me think about it. Oh, yes.
Are you sure? Okay, yes. Thank you. Oh my gosh.
That's all right. All right, with that, we can move to item 6.4. This item is discuss and consider hybrid board and committee meeting technology. We have two presenters tonight. One is our esteemed Director Ozahowski, and the other is Chris Perez. I will turn it over to Director Ozahowski to lead off. Go ahead, Director O.
Thank you, President Martin. First, I would like to thank the ad hoc committee for reaching a unanimous agreement. Special recognition goes to Mr. Perez and his team for doing the necessary legwork. Of the three possible choices, the committee agreed to recommend the hybrid option. The implementation costs for a hybrid option decreased since the last time this was brought to the board's attention last year. Staff has confirmed that all costs associated with initial installation and annual upkeep are within agency's budget. And the legal counsel has confirmed that a hybrid option will adhere to the Brown Act, again, provided that the directors attend meetings in person. Before I go ahead and pass it on to Mr. Perez, if you guys could turn to page 158 under recommendation. Second line down, this hybrid option is a public convenience. And what that means is if for whatever reason, internet is down and we're not able to broadcast, our meeting agenda will continue as long as all the board members are present in person. So we do not have to stop meeting if we have any internet issues. With that, Mr. Perez, can you walk us through the hybrid option and through your presentation?
Of course. Good evening, directors, board of directors. April, could you share our slides?
Sorry about that, Christian. No, give me one second.
Great. Thank you. Next slide, please. Awesome. Thank you very much. So here we have where we started. So we started off with getting an inventory, reaching out to all our colleagues, you know, in the industry and outside of the industry, you know, large and small. As you see here, we got the Los Angeles County. I had the opportunity to talk to their technology folks and you know, understand the scale of what they're handling over there. And then we have our local entities as well as kind of sister water districts and agencies. So as you see here, what this displays overall, there's various methodologies in regards to how people are allowing public participation. Some folks are sticking just to the phone. Some folks are having the public participate remotely by email, just sending in their comments. And then others are fully virtual, having phone, computer, and email. The other thing you notice here is the norm is a hybrid format in which the remote public can participate remotely. That's the norm. It's more rare that we're seeing folks not doing this as of yet. But again, there are some actually the folks that are not on this list here that don't have the hybrid check mark, but are working on hybridizing their format. I understand Saugus was working through that last we spoke. Next slide, April. So part of this exercise, because we reached out to, I don't know, 15 or so public agencies and kind of understand their workflows and their challenges, and a lot of these folks are kind of ahead of us on the curve in that regard, we were able to, you know, this was a great idea asked presented by Director Ozahowski, and he requested that I reach out to these folks and figure out kind of lessons learned, you know, find out what worked, what didn't work, where can we learn from these different agencies that are ahead of us in the timeline. And a couple of things that all kind of the ones that pointed kind of floated to the top were high quality hardware. So not You know, I think it was suggested early on that, oh, why don't you scrap some cameras from the Best Buy and or throw some laptops that you have or whatever, every equipment you have to make it work. And that was kind of the frowned upon, I guess, or that was the lessons learned in regards to a lot of agencies of kind of doing that and having challenges and issues with high quality hardware failing because it's not made for that this level of performance. The other one was a common recommendation was having an IT person present for the entire durations of these meetings. That way they can kind of troubleshoot if there are network issues, whether there are hardware issues physically in the room, whether we need to reboot something, they're all physically present and able to kind of jump into action. So that was a lesson learned and a more common recommendation. And then lastly, practice. So because this is not a normal, natural flow, and now we're talking about physical management of activity as well as virtual management activity, it's going to take some practice to make sure we know and understand both our software and our hardware. And that's going to take a series of exercises and practice meetings. Next slide, April. So here's a kind of just a this is not meant to be all encapsulating, and it's kind of hard to understand because, well, some of it is. The annual cost of staff time with burdens kind of hard to understand because each meeting committee-wise is run by a different person, and they're all different positions. You know, some are executive assistants, some are board secretary, some are other staff levels, so that's it's not really clear across the board because it varies. What I was trying to show, though, is before we had COVID, more or less the total staff costs with time and a half in burden compared to what we anticipate in the hybrid format, and the bump up all is me adding a full-time IT person to the mixture. We didn't have a full-time IT person dedicated to committees and board meetings prior to COVID. We had a hotline open for a half an hour to an hour at the beginning and into the first few minutes of the meeting, but we didn't have a person there physically for the entire duration. We started that way. You know, when we started our organization, we had a lot of help in the first, maybe the first year of our organization, 4.5 years ago. But then we transitioned away from that, physically having a person on premise the entire time. But with going into hybrid, it would be recommended that we have a physical IT person, a technical person on site for the duration of both board meetings and committee meetings. Last thing I'll point out here is so the one-time cost, like I mentioned, it's about $18,500. That's both hardware and software and some programming required to kind of upgrade our physical boardroom. Our physical boardroom has high quality audio that we installed about a year and a half ago, right at the beginning of COVID. We installed this great sound system in there, upgraded the technology, the microphones and the controller systems. And the idea there is to kind of leverage that existing horsepower, so to speak, and then hook up an encoder, install some cameras, and able to kind of take us live. So that's what that $18,500 investment is hardware and some programming and software configurations. And then going forward on an annual basis, we will be incurring the annual cost of licenses, as well as that now, you know, that physical IT person being present both in committee and board meetings. Next slide, April. So this is why I just spelled out here. More hardware is $11,000. That includes two cameras. They're not high-end cameras. They're not low-end cameras. They're kind of mid-range cameras. That includes encoders. It includes some wiring and physical installation, some mounting. And then the programming installation, the $7,500 is the programming of the called Crestron system. So there's a nice interface where either April or the IT person could toggle the camera view, the one of two camera views. And then, this 30 to 45 day install and training, that's aggressive. That's very aggressive because, I've been kind of I keep bugging my folks about the hardware itself. As you know, we all have been challenged with these logistical challenges of getting things that require chips. But as of about a week ago, I checked in, I'm going to be able to kind of stick to that schedule. So if we were to make a decision tonight, I'd pull the trigger tomorrow morning and start getting all this equipment ordered up and getting everything scheduled so we can hit this 30 to 45 day schedule. That's, acquisition of the equipment, installation, and then staff training of all this new workflow. Next slide, please. So this is a camera one. This is kind of more or less a mock-up. I just took a picture of my iPhone, but this is what it more or less will look like. We're talking about two cameras. We're not going full production mode. We have two cameras. We'll have one camera fixed on the entire board. So there's the dais there, and there's about 12 people. It is what it is because of all the separation distances with COVID. So those are the 12 folks that are sitting at the board there. And then we would have one camera fixed, we call it camera one. And then we would toggle between camera one, which would be an instance for the public. It would be an instance inside of our Zoom. So right now, like for example, I can see President Martin in one box. So once we're all physically back in that room, our whole entire board will be one box. So it would be just, you would be zoomed out this much more or less so we can see everyone. It wouldn't be automatically zooming on someone speaking and turning and zooming on someone else speaking. It wouldn't be that experience. We're talking about kind of getting in, sticking our feet wet, so to speak, in this environment and having a fixed view of the experience. We don't have the ability or the people power to produce this event and having someone trying to pick out an individual and zoom in and zoom out and produce the whole exercise. And get one more slide, April, could you move forward one more? This would be the second camera. So second camera two would be fixed on the podium. So any public speakers or any of our staff that want to do a physical presentation in the boardroom, they can physically come here and there'll be a camera fixed on the podium. So if staff wanted to present here, or if the public still wanted to continue to physically provide comment there, that we would have a camera and be able to focus that on that person. Next slide, April. So this is a screenshot of Western Municipal Water District. That's what I was kind of give you a feel of what you're seeing. One camera fixed to the entire board. That's what they have there. They have one camera. They don't have a camera on the their podium's right in front of the board. So you see the back of the speaker there, but we would have two. We'd have one on the board and then one fixed on the podium. And then either April or our IT person would toggle between the podium and the board, with 99% of the time being fixed on the board. So that concludes my presentation. Have any questions or comments?
Thank you, Chris, for your presentation. And thank you, Director Ozahowski. Madam Secretary, do we have any public comment before we go to board question and discussion?
We do. Just one moment. Missy, you may begin your public comment.
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
We can.
Okay. Well, thank you. Good seeing you all. So I had just a couple questions, really, I need for clarification. I'm familiar with the term and the options of normal and hybrid, and I'm kind of guessing that a hybrid means that it's an in-person meeting, but it's also broadcast, so if people want to attend remote, but just a clarification on what that means. And I wondered if there's a third, not an option, but a third kind of condition for comparison, say our current situation, just to compare it to, Zoom meetings and if there's appropriate cost. And my fourth question of clarification is with the webinar license, does annual in one scenario about $10,500. I was just curious if it's possible or if there's options to share a webinar license with another agency. Is there some kind of, is it literally one license per entity or is there some kind of, I don't know, combo platter for whatever?
Thank you for your public comment. Is there any further public comment? There is not. Back to you, President Martin.
All right. Before I read
we got another hand that just went up.
All right. Go ahead.
Ms. Noltmeyer, please hit *6 and you may begin your public comment. Ms. Noltmeyer, please hit *6 and you may begin your public comment.
Pam Noltmeyer, I've been listening to every meeting since this merger went on, and all I see is it just getting a bigger and more complex and more expensive, and I haven't, as ratepayer, I haven't seen any advantages to what all this conglomerate and all these additional people, we have such a huge board, and where are the ratepayers ever considered in all of this? It's just astronomical to me when I sit through this and I hear what is going on, and this is going on and it's getting bigger and more complicated and larger, and it doesn't seem to be accomplishing anything for the ratepayers that I can see or see down the road. All I can see is it's probably going up to pay for all of these salaries and all of these things that you're buying into, and there doesn't seem to be the leadership there on the board to bring anything about that makes sense. And at least for a ratepayer, which I am. And I've been watching it, and I also heard when I asked, you know, about this old system that you sent up, and I didn't get a decent answer to your cloud that you've set up. I know how it's used, and I can't see any reason for a water company to have it. It's these things that are very frustrating for the ratepayer that's out there and watching what's going on. And it's more about the board and what they can do and this, it only takes this 100,000 here and 100,000 there. And it's being done a lot, I think, for the developers. The only thing I can see that this agency is doing is building up a nice big water company for the developers in the future. And I don't think that's the purpose of a water company. They're going to say we have water or we don't have water. And you're going through all these distortions to say, yes, we have enough water. And sooner or later...
Thank you, Ms. Noltmeyer. That completes your public comment. Is there any further public comment? There is not. Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you, April. Before I read the one written comment we got, I wanted to ask Chris if you can recall Missy's question, if you can respond to at least some of what she asked. Sure. It would be helpful, I think.
Yeah, of course. So Missy, you know, before, I think, I'm not sure if you were in attendance, I think it was a year and a half ago. We used to use a different platform. It was called, what was it called? I don't remember anymore, but it was called the GoToMeeting. It was GoToWebinar. So we used a different platform before, prior to where we're at now. It was called GoToWebinar. It was a different program, different software. And what happened, if you were present at that time, is our meeting was taken over. So I'm answering the question about sharing credentials and maybe partnering up with another agency and say, hey, let's share this license. That's what happened. You know, our old model, we had the software we were already using. Let's go ahead and leverage it. You know, we've already been using it. We've already paid for it. Let's use it for this, our public board meetings. And what happened is because we were sharing an account, to keep down costs down, that's what happened is our account was compromised. And it's in bad practice. It's not good practice to share any credentials, as especially in the environment we're in right now. We're in heightened alert in regards to Homeland Security about all these, you know, they're encouraging all these best practices about number one, not sharing credentials. Number two, making sure that a lot of our systems are within the United States of America. Another issue why we're paying kind of a premium, so to speak, with Zoom for Government, as opposed to just the commercial grade Zoom, which is less expensive. The concern there is Zoom for Government's the only product that's been approved by the Department of Defense for use for this type of realm, because outside of approval of Department of Defense, what was concerning to commercial or your kind of business grade Zoom is that the servers that were running and some of the data that was being hosted and saved on the Zoom was in the country of China on their servers, on their systems. So we're paying a little bit more to have a little more peace of mind, a lot more security, and a lot more control of our information and systems, as opposed to being outside of our boundary of the United States of America.
Thank you, Chris. Before we open up to board discussion and questions, I did have a written comment from Lisa M. McDougall by email. It was addressed to April. It says, "Hello, April. I would like to send an email in support of continuation of water board hybrid meetings. It is important to continue allowing the public access to critical decisions being made about our water. Thank you, Lisa M. McDougall." All right, so that concludes public comment, and we do have ready for public, rather board discussion and questions. We have a number of hands in the air. I will go to Director Bronstein first.
Thank you. I see that Director Orzechowski has his hand up, so maybe he has some information that I'm about to ask. So I don't know how you want to do this. I can ask my questions, or you can let Director Orzechowski go first.
Let me go ahead and tackle what I was going to say, and then you'll go next. Are you okay with that, Director Bronstein?
Totally fine.
Go ahead, Director Orzechowski.
Thank you, President Martin. I want to bring to board's attention, Mr. Perez, we pay our annual license for these Zoom calls. Is that correct?
Correct, yes.
And how much are we paying for this now?
This particular instance right now is about $1,500, I think it is. We have about $1,500, I think it is, for this license right now, as we're using right now this second for April's license.
Okay, so if you look at page 158, that annual license for this hybrid model will be essentially less by the current amount that we pay, because our current amount with our Zoom setup is our, how should I say, our new normal. Also, I would like to bring your attention that I spoke with Mr. Perez about a mobile platform that could be used in case our Rio Vista boardroom gets overcrowded. And I believe that's included in this hybrid model. Is that right, Mr. Perez?
The mobile platform?
Yes.
We do have that was repurposing equipment. You and I had that discussion. We have equipment that we're repurposing specific for this exercise, so those costs aren't included with the numbers we provided, because we would repurpose equipment we already have. We have some audio visual equipment that we have physically at the Rockefeller office, and we would physically move that on to the Rio Vista office to help with overflow. There was an instance where we had too many physical people at the Rio Vista board. We could overflow into one of the spaces there by using some of the equipment we already have and configure it to kind of service the board and committee.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Perez. And also want to bring to board attention that the current setup at the summit conference room is ready. I mean, this is what are we going to do? Well, pending the vote, this will be a copy and paste of what's happening in the summit conference room. with an addition of an additional camera for the podium. So, you know, plus with the lessons learned that Mr. Perez and his team interviewed other agencies, I think his and his team is well equipped in making this happen. Also, for all the directors that remember being in a boardroom, there were two projectors that are hanging from the ceiling. Those are not used now since the boardroom is equipped with large LCD screens. And those are the exact location of the two cameras that will be mounted to. So, you know, the position and the cabling is more or less there. So nothing new will have to be done in that retrospect. That's it for me. Back to you, President Martin.
Very good. Thank you, Director Ozahowski, and thank you, Chris. Back to Director Bronstein for your question or comment.
Thank you so much. So yes, Director Ozahowski answered some of my questions. Another question that I had was, I'm assuming that we're doing this so staff can report remotely and doesn't have to be present. So I was wondering how that works and how that would work for people viewing it remotely. That's one question, or with two parts. And then the other question that I had was, you kept on mentioning that it works well as long as all directors are present, are in person. So I guess my question about that was, all directors that are attending that meeting, which means, do we need to maintain a quorum, or let's say somebody's calling in remotely or something like that happens, would that then make it not valid anymore under the Brown Act? That's it.
All right. Let me see if I can jump in and interpret your question about, I think in our whatever proposed hybrid program we're going to have, any director, pending what we do on item 11.1 tonight, the only way directors can call in once we go back to in-person meetings would be through the conference line. Is that correct, April?
Yes, it would be, yeah.
Okay.
And they could also go through the Zoom. So they would do whatever we were doing hybrid-wise, they could do that as well.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, Gary, if you need any further help on that, and probably council could jump in. I think it would work the same way any board meeting works, as long as you have a quorum still present. You know, whether we were just doing a telephone call, which we've done a few times where a director has called in on the phone, right? And we notice it on the agenda, the location of the call, etc. If for some reason that connection were to be interrupted, we simply would proceed as if that director were no longer in the room, quote unquote, or at the meeting. And as long as we didn't drop below a quorum, we could proceed, as I understand it. But perhaps council could opine.
Yeah, thank you, Matt. No, you got it there. That is a good description. And what President Martin had said, Director Bronstein had said, if you're participating remotely, once AB 361 is no longer applicable, then you would have to notice on the agenda the location of where you'll be participating and also make that location accessible to the public. So that would be the main change. The only, and technically the Brown Act allows for remote participation and option of the board, as President Martin said, we'll discuss later. And a quorum of the board needs to be present within the jurisdictional boundaries of the agency. So there's no requirement that a quorum be present in person. But anyway. We'll get to that later, I think.
Very good. Does that address your question, Director Barnes? Very good.
Question. If I can get an answer about staff presentation.
All right. Chris, staff presentations, how will they be made?
Sure. This is actually, do you want to speak, Director Ozahowski? I think this is something he actually specifically brought up as something to focus on. Do you want to?
Go ahead, Ms. Perez. I think we're on the same terms.
Sure. So Director Ozahowski had asked me to kind of reach out and talk with other department heads about kind of the, you know, what the benefit, one of the, you know, if this is a benefit to their staff and the, kind of the their participation in meetings, and it is a positive option. So staff would have the option now to physically either come physically to the board or present via, you know, via their home workspace, like I am now, using their camera, their company issued camera, laptop and equipment.
So how would that play out for the people calling in, like for the hybrid?
It'd be the same experience as we're experiencing now. The only difference is there'll be, you know, it's instead of one of these boxes would be the office, or that would be the boardroom. And there's, you still have all the other folks participating, whether in the public would see, you know, a box on their screen. If they're watching from home, they would see a box on the screen of the presenter who's presenting whatever presentation they're doing remotely on their Zoom experience. So it would be no different than what we're experiencing now.
So they'd be able to see the presentation on their screen as well.
Correct. Yeah. Just like when April was, you know, shifting through the slides for me and you saw my face on the side, exactly the same.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Very good. Director Kolick, go ahead.
So there were others ahead of me in my hand. So do you want to take us in closer in the order that we, I don't want to butt in.
President Martin, you're muted.
Oh, there's four hands up and I don't know what order they were raised. So they were all kind of up when we began board discussion. So
okay, well,
I'm last.
I'll let you go next, Lynn.
All right. So my first comment is that I would hate to have April's workload increase during a board meeting. So I'm hoping that the IT person during board meeting would take care of switching cameras. I think it's important that the board secretary focus on her job, and I wouldn't want her to be distracted from that by something like changing cameras. I also don't think it'd be a good idea to start off with both committee and board meetings. Board meetings are quite a bit different animal than our board meetings. The committee meetings are much more informal. They're set up in a different format. We don't all face an audience. We typically are around a table facing each other. It really, I think, be much more difficult to do the committee meeting well, to broadcast it. And I also note that it increases the amount of overtime we're going to be paying for IT well over double, because there are more committee meetings in a month than there are board meetings. So my preference would be to start in doing this, and I'm supportive of doing it, with the board meetings. And perhaps in a couple of years, if we really think that this is of enough value to go to committees as well, then maybe you consider it later. But I would support the option of doing what the hybrid model that's been proposed for board meetings only. Thank you.
Well, before I go to you, Lynn, Director Ozahowski probably would like to respond to Director Colley's question. Go ahead, Director Ozahowski.
So, Director Colley, we've considered that during our ad hoc committee, and unfortunately, we are restricted based on COVID measures. So as I mentioned before, Summit Circle is Summit Conference Room is ready to go, but it has a it's a significantly smaller room. and therefore would not meet the LA County public health criteria for all the committee members and any speakers. That's why it was proposed to make committee meetings and boardroom regular board meetings at Rio Vista.
So is it all right, President Martin, for me to respond to that? Okay. So my thinking is that I'm assuming we're thinking a little more long-term beyond the current restrictions with COVID, trying to plan something for the future. And so I'm looking at what it may look like when we get pretty close to what used to be. And so I would rather have our committee meetings return to something close to what they used to be and not reformat them, if you will, in order to facilitate COVID type of restrictions or other restrictions based on this hybrid model. I would rather, like I say, I think that, as we transition back to something more close to the normal that we used to know, that we use this hybrid model for our board meetings only. That's not my, so I don't think it has anything to do with the current COVID. My comments aren't COVID related. They're related to what I would like to see long term. Thanks.
All right, President Martin, may I address that?
Sure, go ahead, Director Zahofsky. Yes.
Okay, so our committee meetings pre-COVID were very informal and roundtable-ish, and that's possible at the summit conference room. But again, we can't do it. The room is too small. And regarding your other concern regarding April, Ms. Jacobs, It's an overwhelming task. I had a discussion with Ms. Jacobs regarding this and Mr. Perez. As you remember, pre-COVID, there are certain switches where a board member presses when he or she either votes yes, no, or abstain. And in addition, there's also a switch on the microphone to initiate it. So absolutely, Mr. Perez and his team and Ms. Jacobs will have to do several dry runs once the system is up and running. But again, Mr. Perez has a lot of lessons learned from other agencies. That's why we did not initiate. That's why we did not want to be early adapters and start this later than everyone else. Hopefully that addresses your question regarding Ms. Jacobs. Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you, Director Ozahofsky. Director Planback, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that one of the concerns over the Brown Act that Mr. Ozahofsky had was, did you see? I did your name pretty well that time. is that whether we would, if there was an interruption of a meeting, whether we would have to do what happened that time last year, where we had to delay the meeting and re-notice it for the next day. And we were informed by the attorney that it's, as was explained, a convenience to the public so that if the meeting was somehow interrupted by an internet breakdown or outage or some kind of interference, that we would not have to continue the meeting to the next day, which is very expensive for the agency to do that. So that was, I think that came up about 15 or 20 minutes ago. But then the other thing that I wanted to say is, it would just be the committee meetings would be in the regular boardroom. So maybe there would be a little bit more tech expense, but it wouldn't be that much more. And we are already conducting meetings in the summit, particularly for the outreach committee, where we have our people at the state capitol and our federal legislative folks reporting via Zoom already now. So if we go back to pre-COVID times, we could use the summit, but it's there's not any reason to not use the boardroom now. And the last thing I want to say is that because of the Zoom meetings, I've been able to just listen to the other committee meetings. And I really appreciate that happening because some of these issues are fairly complicated. And it's very helpful for me to, when there's one, something that I'm concerned with at a committee meeting, to just be able to listen. And it would be really difficult to have to drive in all the time. So I think it's important for the committee meetings to be available to both directors and other directors in the public as well.
Thank you, Director Planbeck, for your comment. Director Kelly.
Well, my notes are bounced all over the place now listening to everybody. But I'll start off with the public has been crying to try to get us to follow the city in dealing with television and taping and everything of the meetings. Is it the intention that Zoom, based on the information presented, would be an indefinite period of time for the Zoom or for the hybrid? Or are you looking at this only being until the end of so-called end of, you know, of the pandemic? That's one of the questions. So, you know, I'd like to look at some responses. Also, the board versus committee, there's been some conversation already. I tend to disagree with Director Asahasi that the summer room is too small. I've been there for a long time. We have an average of 8 people, 5 board members, general manager, if he so wishes to show up, and usually 2 staff and 1 council. Everybody else is remote. And I would assume that if we ended up having Zoom continue, that the 1 or 2 or 3 public individuals that would come to the meetings would stay on Zoom. They enjoy it. They like it. There's less threat for them. So I disagree that we can't abide by the 6-foot rule and everything else with regards to the summit. Also, what do you do, whether it's the board meeting or the committee, but what do you do as far as attendance at the board meetings at Rio Vista if the general public wants to come? And what are you going to do if you have 20 or 30 people come in to fight a specific issue? You know, how are you going to handle that as far as dealing with the pandemic and COVID? And then let me go to looking under the recommendation. It's a little confusing to me. It says the ad hoc committee recommends that the board of directors approve the boardroom technology upgrades to support remote public participation as a public convenience, and that COVID distancing restrictions be lifted, until COVID distancing restrictions are lifted, that all board meetings and committee meetings be held at the Rio Vista. Are we assuming that we're going to be able to comply 100% with the distancing and the COVID restrictions at the board meeting versus we can't do it at the summit, which I feel we can. So I just felt that was kind of wordy and non-responsive from me. I can stop with those questions and see what else comes up.
Very good. Thank you, Director Kelly. Director Ozahofsky, would you like to weigh in on Director Kelly's questions?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Director Kelly, the summit conference room is can accommodate the committee pre-pandemic, but if there's any contested agenda item, the room will not be able to handle a lot more people in it, based on LA County public health restrictions. So the reason why we can't meet at Summit Conference Room is because of that. You know, once all those restrictions are lifted and we're out of this state of emergency, then, as I mentioned before, Summit Conference Room is ready for those committees with the hybrid option. And I believe your second comment was regarding the recommendation. Can you repeat what we don't like about the recommendations? What's wordy about it?
Yeah, I'll go back to it real fast. It was mostly talking about that this would continue until COVID districting restrictions are lifted, that all board members and committee meetings will be held at the board at Rio Vista. I just felt it was confusing as to why the summit meetings have to come to Rio Vista and why Rio Vista wouldn't have just as much of a distancing problem and restriction problem as the summit or any place else.
Okay. All right. Let me go ahead and attempt to answer that. But before I do, is our attorney still on the line? Mr. Byrne, I would like to share my screen and show three pictures of the Rio Vista. If I do, and since those pictures were not included in the agenda board meetings, do I have to then send them to April so that she attaches them to the meeting minutes?
I think that's probably a good idea to do for after the fact, but it's fine to share your screen right now, similar to a presentation that's being made, so no issue.
Okay, in that case, April, I'm gonna share my screen. Right, and could I get a confirmation that you can see a picture of the boardroom? Yep.
You okay. Can see the picture, yeah.
All right, so this is the front of the boardroom. This is the back, and this is, I guess, the educational cafeteria-ish kind of a place, and I believe that we can accommodate the overflow in this area with Mr. Perez's portable monitor. So that anyone who is not physically in the conference room can attend here, and then we can definitely space out all the seats per LA County Public Health recommendations. Director Kelly, does that answer your question?
Yeah, I can see what you're trying to accomplish. The only thing I'll do in closing, I'll say, you know, the word "if" is really a big word. You're using if there's more attendance by the public, and I'm using if there's more public that continue on Zoom. So we're at an impasse as far as the if. But no matter what the outcome, I deeply appreciate you and the committee's hard work on this. I think you've done an excellent job in presenting everything. Doesn't mean we all have to agree, but thank you very much for your efforts and putting everything forward.
Thank you, Director Kelly. Back to you, President Martin.
All right, before we go to Director Armitage or her question, I just want April to weigh in. Right now, we're not doing video recording. We are only doing audio recordings. Is that correct, April?
That is correct. And that would continue.
All right. Mm-hmm. So the idea of having video recording, that's not an issue. So go ahead, Director Armitage.
Thank you. So first, I want to also say thank you to the staff who took the time to do the research and gather the information for consideration. I was on the ad hoc committee, and it was very clear to me that a lot of time went into this. So thank you for that. A lot of good information was shared, so I won't repeat any of that. I just want to share that the committee did hear more than once that staff does want to have this hybrid option offered so that they don't have to sit in the boardroom for hours and hours just to make a 5-minute presentation during the meetings. And it was also brought up, and I think it was a good point, that if we do have this hybrid option, it will get the board members back into the board meeting to have in-person meetings faster, because then we'll have less staff members and less members of the public physically in the room so we can do better with spacing. So I appreciated that point being made as well. So I'll just say that I support moving forward with upgrading the technology to allow for the continued hybrid board meetings. I think we should move forward with the committee meetings as well. I think so many important details get hashed out in the committee meetings that that the public should be able to view these really important discussions. And then I, as Director Planbeck had mentioned, I myself very much appreciate being able to also listen in on the committee meetings because it helps me understand the issues better when before they come to the full board for consideration. And then I don't have to ask the same questions that have already been asked as well by the committee members. So thank you.
Thank you, Director Armitage. Are there any other comments or discussion from the board before I ask my questions? All right, seeing none, I have a comment and a question. Actually, something to point out. First of all, with regard to whether Rio Vista can accommodate a group, the board and or staff and or public, and still comply with the LA County health protocols. April and other members of the staff have done a lot of work in laying out the boardroom such that we can comply. So it's not like we're just going to, okay, now let's start thinking about the boardroom. April has been working on this for some time. And I think Director Ozahofsky, since you came into the boardroom, you saw the plexiglass shields and you saw the layout. And certainly all those chairs bunched up in front of the dais is not the way we're going to lay it out. But I know April's done a lot of work. So I just wanted to make that point. And I wanted to ask Chris, since we have at least two board meetings, four committee meetings, and a number of special meetings during the year, are you planning to share this workload? If we have to have an IT person at every meeting, I don't want to have a situation where it all falls on you or any one person. So I'm assuming that you have a plan to share this responsibility with other members of your staff. Is that true?
That is correct. It's going to be a shared responsibility.
Okay, excellent. Very good. All right. I don't see any other hands raised, although I don't see all directors on my little screen. I did want to ask a question to Chris. And I think I've gotten the answer, but we'll all see at our particular seat at the dais, we'll have a screen, whether it be our agency iPads or some other device. We will see the presentations that are made by staff, whether they be from their remote location or in the boardroom. Is that correct?
Yeah. It'd be no different than when you experienced before. We all went remote. You know, we had the PowerPoints were all presented and all the large TVs that are fixed around the boardroom. In addition to that, we have a smaller TV that we're going to roll in temporarily. It's a low profile TV. We'll roll in temporarily into the middle of the dais area, and that it'd be kind of a leaning, you know, angled. So if someone needed, you know, couldn't see across the room, they could see the little TV down below in the middle of the space.
We won't have individual devices at our board seat at in the boardroom. Is that correct?
You'll have your individual iPads, and you, as you remember, before we went to COVID, you all used those. You use those for the agendas and the onboard application. Right. You would have that. And so instead, right now, President Martin, you're looking at your iPad, and we're seeing you on your iPad. We wouldn't be doing that. It'd be kind of like your experience prior to the COVID. You'll be using that iPad only for the onboard and looking at the agenda. You would not be using it as a camera or as a microphone. It would just be as it was before we are now.
Okay. It is hard to recall what life was like before COVID.
Yeah.
But I'll be happy to find out again, once again. So thank you, Chris, and Director Ozahofsky for your work. Director Bronstein, you have your hand raised again. Go ahead.
Yeah, one last question. I just wanted to make sure that we also tested what it would be like if people are wearing masks and talking, like in the boardroom, to make sure that it's all audible for everyone.
Yeah, that'd be part of the testing, the whole testing. I think it was when I say the practice. It's a part of that calibration. It's going to be part of the whole experience, is calibrating everything. And the one thing we do have right now as we speak in that boardroom is real high-end audio. So we have some beautiful high-end microphones that we had purchased about a year and a half ago. And it might be a matter of calibrating that so that it captures more than because now we're wearing masks. But we will be testing that, correct?
Okay, thank you so much. And I really appreciate all the work that you guys did and the ad hoc committee. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
President Martin, you're muted.
Sorry about that. All right, I don't see any other hands raised at the moment. So I think we've had a pretty full discussion on this, good presentations. Do I have a motion for the item as presented?
Bronstein motions.
Lambeck seconds.
All right, we have a motion and a second for the hybrid implementation of the recommended hybrid program. Is that correct? All right, so any other discussion by the board before we call for the vote? Seeing none, Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Will all the directors please unmute? As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Armitage, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Plambeck?
Yes.
Director Atkins?
Yes.
Director Ozahofsky?
Yes.
Director Bronstein? Yes. Director Kelly?
Yes.
Director Cooper?
Yes.
Director Colley?
No.
Director Ford?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen?
No.
Vice President Gladbeck?
Yes.
President Martin?
Yes.
This item does move forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ad hoc committee once again. Thank you, board. Thank you for the discussion. And if someone could mute their... Go ahead, Director O, you have another something to say.
Yeah, since the policy has passed, I would like for the board president to dissolve the ad hoc committee.
I think that it has basically dissolved itself. There's no further discussion unless something new comes up. So consider it dissolved for the moment. Yes, very good. All right, we can then move on to item 7. This is the presentation by the safety team, safety review, emergency preparedness presentation by the safety team led by Mark Passamani. Mark, are you ready to go?
Yes, sir. Thank you, President Martin. And good evening, everyone. I will be providing a condensed version of the safety update for Q2. Q2's training and incident data, which will be followed by Joe Diaz and Aaron Southard, who will be giving an update on the progress of the agency's emergency response plan. Next slide, please. Here in Q2, the slide on the left, the larger number, reflects that we had 42 classes held. And part of the reason why that number is higher is to accommodate the COVID restriction, the guidelines by LA County and the other regulatory bodies. We had a number of classes that were smaller in size, so we had to have more classes corresponding to that. And also on the far right of this slide, the total number of employees was 385. And again, that's total employees, multiple employees, obviously, for some of the classes. And some of the training that the classes we had, again, the main focus of all of our training is focusing on prevention and awareness and maintaining OSHA, Cal OSHA, specifically compliance. And some of the courses we had in Q2 were respiratory fit testing and training, hazardous waste operations awareness, qualified rigging and flagger training, first aid CPR, and again, that's been conducted by Joe Diaz. He's been doing a fine job with that. That's been a nice addition to the staff and to the training since he's been on board. And another training that we did in Q2 that I thought was unique and I think pretty well received was a COVID training led by our general manager, Matt Stone. We went across all agency locations with human resources and the safety team and kind of gave updates and status updates of the frequently changing regulatory rules, some of the HR emergency administrative leave types of policies. And I think it was a good touch. Of course, we were physically distanced and did that properly, but it was a good change of pace. You know, everyone has been experiencing COVID fatigue. And I think that was a good way to connect with all the staff. I think the technology that we've had with these Teams meetings has been a great technology enhancement to work safely and more efficiently. But I think that was a good idea. And I think I thanked Matt for that several months ago. But again, I want to pass my thanks on to Matt and all the teams who participated in that. I think that was a good training. Next slide, please. Next slide deals with incident data for Q2. And you may notice that in Q2, we had a spike in incidents, recordable incidents, and a couple of new incident types that we have never had before. One of those was a vehicle incident where we had an employee who was driving and was struck from behind by another driver. It was no fault of our employee, but there was a back strain, and it did meet the definition of a OSHA recordable. So that was kind of a unique one that we don't experience often, fortunately. And again, I think the driver safety training that we've done helps with that. But again, with the increased traffic in the valley, and you know, we can't control all drivers, but that was a unique one. And the other two. Well, there were three, actually. The other two that were kind of unique that we have never experienced were COVID, work-related COVID courses, cases, I should say. We had a COVID case that really didn't develop until a couple of days later. That initial case was non-work-related. They attained that through an off-site contact. And in the nature of the job, some of the tasks that this group did, it required being kind of close and handling of material, handling of items. And while it isn't conclusive that those two cases were confirmed work-related, just given the fact that those two employees were defined as close contact, by Cal/OSHA's definitions, they're presumed work-related. So that's how we've identified them. And as a result of that, we modified that job task and have since made the potential for any kind of COVID interaction significantly less. So we've modified that. As we do with any type of injury, we try to do our best to either retrain or modify or better design a particular job or task. And the fourth incident was a small cut that required stitches. So kind of a higher quarterly incident number than we've ever had before. But again, given the nature of work we do and the huge spike we had in December with COVID cases, LA County-wise, of course, that impacted our staff. That showed an increase in Q2. So again, our main focus will be to continue what we've done over the years, focus on prevention, training, awareness. And then if we do have to modify a task or a job, we'll do our best to modify it and make it safer moving forward. Next slide, please. This is a graph that we've shown based on history, a five-year comparison of our fiscal year data numbers. And as noted in the previous slide, we did have a spike in the Q2 numbers, which pushed our number up to 5.7. Again, the nature of statistics kind of push numbers a bit higher. Again, we're basing that number on the total recordable injuries we had and an estimate of the total hours worked. That's how that ratio comes about. So again, it did show a spike. We're looking at getting back to a lower number clearly. And again, we are confident we can do so. But I wanted to point out some of the challenges that we've had over the last several months with COVID, and then kind of that vehicle incident, which was a little bit beyond our control. I'll field any questions after Joe and Aaron give their presentation. I want to give them an opportunity to give their presentation. And if there are any questions, I'll be glad to field them there. And for now, I'll pass it on to Joe Diaz and Aaron Southard for progress made on the emergency response plan. Thank you.
All right, great. Thank you, Mark. I'll begin the emergency response plan presentation with a very brief history of the ERP requirement and the agency plan itself. I'll also briefly discuss the current status of the plan. And then afterwards, I'll sign off and my fellow colleague, Joe Diaz, will take over and he'll further explain the ERP and the admirable work that he's performed on this ERP. So the reason why we have an ERP requirement and an ERP itself is because of the Bioterrorism Act that was established in 2002. This was a direct governmental response to 9/11. The act was designed to improve the preparedness and response of not only first responders, but also other businesses and public utilities such as SCV Water. After the act was established and in effect, the pre-merger agencies collaborated on preparing a vulnerability assessment. And from that assessment, it was determined that the biggest threat to those agencies at the time was vandalism. And then after the assessment and a few improvements were made based on that, and you'll see those listed there, such as storage tank hatch alarms, improved the fencing around not only the facilities, but other remote locations, security camera installations, and then increasing site visits, not only by the field staff, but as safety department as well. Next slide, please, April. So in 2002, the pre-mergers, that was my fault. So prior to 2018, each legacy organization had their own emergency response plan. Those plans went over evacuation plans. They went over threats, roles and responsibilities, critical operations. It also included things like natural disasters, such as fires and earthquakes and those types of things. But it also included setting up agreements with Cal Warren. Cal Warren is a statewide water and wastewater agency response network. Its function is to coordinate with the state office's emergencies and help promote statewide preparedness, disaster response, and mutual aids for water and wastewater industries specifically. Next slide, please, April. Thank you. So where is the agency currently with the ERP? In March of 2020, the agency submitted its risk and resilient assessment to the EPA. The EPA is what set up the American Water Infrastructure Act in 2018. And this act was actually a follow-up to the Bioterrorism Act mentioned earlier. The risk and resilience assessment covers all the topics that's presented right here on the right side of the screen, up in the next slide, actually. So next slide, please. And then that will pretty much cover it for me. I'll go ahead and pass it over to Joe Diaz.
Thank you, Aaron, and good evening. I'll continue on from this point. And What I really wanted to focus on is the what's truly the difference between the emergency response plan and the emergency action plans. Although they're both required by OSHA, the emergency action plan is focusing, is basically a plan that is focusing on how the agency personnel from that facility are planning to function during those events, and how the emergency response plan is ideally essentially similar in pretext, but it really focuses on how the agency is going to operate with the community and emergency responders. So that's truly the biggest differences between the EAP and the ERP. So ideally with developing these EAPs or emergency action plans, it's a coordinated effort because it deals with specific hazards for each location. So some locations will just be general office locations. So hazards are there and they're present, but they don't deal with chemical releases typically. They don't have all these different variations of spills and environmental concerns, like, for example, chemical facilities. So specific hazards are really what changes the ideal plan and how each facility will coordinate during these events. Next slide, please, Aaron, April. Some improvements that we've done thus far since the merger and at our current state. The emergency communication system that Newhall County Water District had, we've actually recently changed ownership to that FCC license, and it's now actually adopted, and it's the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency's FCC communication channel. So we've taken on that emergency radio communication system, and now we're expanding it. We're placing more radios on mobile radios on vehicles agency-wide as equipment becomes available due to COVID, as well some aspects of technology and communication is on a holding pattern. So we're getting communication equipment as it's available. We've added some mobile facility radios at specific locations, and we now actually can communicate in the event of emergency from Rio Vista to Rockefeller to Pine Street to Golden Triangle, and soon we'll be adding a radio at Earl Schmidt, and in the future we'll be adding a radio at Summer Circle. Also included in these improvements will be quarterly testing. So we'll be performing quarterly testing, the functionality of the radio systems, and that will also incorporate training for all employees who will be responding and assisting during these events. Recently added was an emergency mass notification system, alert media is who the agency is using. And also that's another form and way to communicate to all of our facilities and all of our employees during these emergency events or urgent matters. Again, we're also performing this monthly as a monthly test of the system to ensure that all employees are receiving the notifications, and also for accountability of the system. And so all of the agency employees are aware of this system and how to operate during these events. We reached out to each facility, and we've actually trained some admins at each location. So if someone sees something, they can report it and they can actually use the system to notify everyone. With the emergency action plan developments or revisions, are updating and performing safety and introducing the emergency safety monitor program. So what that entails is that we're developing safety coordinators at each facility. So we have facility members who can assist with evacuations, notifications, calling 911, meeting at the evacuation assembly areas, and performing accountability. That's all part of the emergency action plan, and we're establishing the emergency safety monitors as we're revising each plan. Some examples of evacuation drills that we've done were the great shakeouts of 2020 and 2021, and we performed evacuation drills when we recently updated the Pine Street and Rockefeller emergency action plans. Next slide, please. Currently, I'm working on a Rio Vista's emergency action plan. I should have it complete by the end of this month. And following the completion of the plan, we'll be performing training for all employees. And as I complete each emergency action plan, we perform training, and we do this on a yearly basis and as new employees get introduced into the facilities. So it's a reevaluation yearly, and as new employees enter the agency, we ensure that they're also properly trained. The emergency action plans are also plans that will be available for all employees to reflect back on, and they'll be available for all employees to view on a SharePoint. Added training because of the redevelopment of these plans will include a live fire extinguisher training, bring back active shooter training, and working with the city and Red Cross to perform mass casualty incidents. What we've also gained through redevelopment of our emergency response plan, because it requires coordinating with the local emergency responders and the community. We are performing quarterly meetings with the local City of Santa Clarita Emergency Preparedness Group. That's a new group that was recently established with their updating their local hazard mitigation plan. And it's actually a great functional working group. It deals with all the city members and colleges and high schools and elementary. We're dealing with the county. It's just all the emergency responders and government agencies in the local Santa Clarita area. We also perform quarterly meetings with the Los Angeles County Emergency Management Division. And due to COVID, that most of those meetings have been either via Zoom, as we're performing today, or they've been postponed due to COVID. We've been active members of our local emergency planning committee for Region 1. And that's similar to like a Cal Warren Region 1 as far as how it's established. But these emergency managers and emergency responders deal with as far as St. Louis Obispo County all the way down to Orange County. And they're all emergency responders, fire department, sheriff's department, Cal OES, city managers, water districts, any government agency that's available to be part of this group. It's a working group that helps reevaluate hazard mitigation plans and emergency response plans for those geographical areas. Cal Warren is another organization who we meet with quarterly for Region 1. And during the start of this pandemic, they call it a point of distribution, a pod. We became a pod unit to distribute emergency PPE due to COVID, and actually worked really well. We worked as a team down at Pine Street, and we developed a plan to help distribute cloth masks and face shields and hand sanitizers that were donated by Cal OES. And it was a great experience. From some other future plans that we'll be performing will be emergency response drills, as I mentioned, some field scenarios, tabletop exercises, and as we develop a functional emergency operations center, some EOC training, emergency communication exercises, and additional FEMA emergency operations center training. And that's mainly focusing on specific tasks or specific sites, depending on how our agency emergency operations center is developed. Specific job sites or job tasks will be established. Next slide, please. And this last slide is just a good example of a fire we had this last year. It was the North Fire. It started over in Castaic and eventually made its way over toward the West Hills area. It was a great coordination. I was speaking with a lot of our agency members from our water systems group, and we were in great contact and kept communication going We used our alert media, emergency mass notification system. We activated the system, alerted all agency-wide of the mandatory evacuations that were established by the Sheriff's Department and the Fire Department, and got great feedback and was able to communicate with everyone in the agency within the moment's notice. And it was a great collaborative effort, again, as I mentioned, with the operations and our water systems group. And with that, I'll pass it back to Mark. Thank you.
Great, thank you, Joe. And I'd really like to thank Joe, Aaron, agency people that Joe worked with, and all the other things that he just mentioned. It's really quite a large project, and he's accomplished quite a bit in a relatively short period of time. So great job, everyone involved with that, and Joe for leading that project. And if there are any questions on Joe's presentation or the safety portion, we'll be glad to field them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Joe. Excellent presentation. Do we have any public comment, April, before we open it up to board discussion?
We do not.
Excellent. We can go ahead and start addressing the raised hands. Director Cooper, I'll let you take off.
Thank you, President Martin. Yeah, a couple of questions for you, I guess, Mark or Joe. Does what we put together, does it meet all the requirements of SEMS? And do we have an identified emergency or an incident command center with identified incident commanders, logistics, operations, the finance, all the requirements in a SEMS system?
Joe,
yes,
would you
like to
feel that?
Yes, I'll take that. Thank you. Yes, with our emergency response plan, we did develop our incident command system or incident command structure. And that covers who was going to be running the operation. Presently, right now, we have established as a Pine Street. Pine Street right now is our main emergency operations center at the moment. But we're planning to establish what's considered satellite EOCs, so satellite emergency operation centers, are individual work sites that can be functional, so that functional groups can operate and communicate. So, for example, Rockefeller. I like to use Rockefeller as a good example because our information and technology department is there, and our customer service is there, and so functionally, because all their tools and equipment are available at that location, they can function as a group. Communicate with the rest of the agency through the emergency communication system that we have in place. And I'm working actually with Chris's group right now to conduct or actually evaluate satellite internet and satellite phone capabilities. So that's another kind of a side project that will be associated with this. And so the idea is that we establish satellite emergency operation centers agency-wide, specifically at each location, to serve more of a functional aspect. But yes, at the present moment, Pine Street would be the ideal emergency operations center at this moment.
So that's where Matt Stone and the senior people would go to that to establish those positions of incident commander and down the line. Yeah, you know, one of the things, and I did this years ago, I was the logistics officer for Metropolitan, is if we don't meet the requirements of SEMS, if we don't get up to their standardized methods that they use, it can keep us from receiving FEMA funds. And it can keep us from receiving California funds as well. If we don't have that system in place that meets all of those requirements. So yeah, I'm glad to hear that you're doing that and that Pine Street's going to be the incident command center, because you have to have one identified and everybody has to have their role established over there. So yeah, that's very good. Thanks, Joe. I appreciate that. And
no problem.
My other comment goes to Mr. Pasamani. Is we heard at our last meeting this rumor that that you were retiring. And I just want to tell you, Mark, I think it was a shock to all of us, but congratulations to you. You have done a terrific job at the agency in bringing us up to the standards that we are now. And I sure appreciate the work that you've done. And congratulations on retirement. I tell you, I can highly recommend it. Hmm. It's good.
Yes. Well, thank you so much. I greatly appreciate it. I'm looking forward to the next adventure. I've got a long list of things to do and places to go, and I feel comfortable and confident in Joe and Aaron, and as the department evolves, is going to continue to get better. So I thank you so much and feel good about what we've done, because we have come a long way, I think. Still a long way to go, but again, thank you so much for that. I appreciate that.
Well, Mark, you'll know when you're retired when you start wondering what day of the week it is. That's when it really shows that you're retired. So good luck. I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Director Cooper. Mark, I was going to hold my comments till the end, and I will do that. But yeah, we're aware you're leaving, and I said, who let that happen? So so I will go to Director Armitage next.
Thank you. Thank you also for this presentation, but also thank you to Mr. Passamani and Mr. Southard and Mr. Diaz for continuing the work that you're doing and trying to keep all the staff safe through this COVID craziness. I want to say it's very reassuring to me to see the regional planning that's happening and that will hopefully make for effective communication and collaboration during any future emergency situations. So thank you for sharing that information. I do have two questions. One of them is I did ask a while back on for future agenda items to have information presented on emergency plans. Is this it? Is this the presentation?
Yes.
Okay.
If there's any other feedback or questions you have, we would be happy to reply and provide additional information, because it's still evolving, still things, as Joe pointed out, that we're going to be doing in the near future. Mm-hmm. So yes, that is correct.
Perfect. Okay. Just wanted to confirm that. Thank you. And then my second question was, is the communications team, Kathy Martin's team, also part of these discussions? So that there is a plan for communication to the public when an emergency arises. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you. Joe, would you like to field that? I know you've have a number of communications branches, so to speak, there, if you would like to address that one.
Yes, definitely. So as we developed our emergency response plan, yes, Kathy Martin and her group has been well involved in the planning process. And as we evolve and reevaluate their emergency action plan for their specific Summit Circle facility, they will be the team to assist with that as well. And we've been having some discussions not too long ago as far as communicating to the public. And we recently had during our last City of Santa Clarita Emergency Planning Committee, that topic actually came up. And how we can communicate to the public if we needed to. And the Sheriff's Department, the City of Santa Clarita, they both use what's NICSL for communicating to the city. And we could actually, they could assist us with some of that communication as well. So that's also part of the communication planning. But yes, as we keep evolving on these emergency action plans, Ms. Kathy and her group will also be included and has been included. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for your response, Joe. Director Ford, go ahead.
Thank you, President Martin. Thanks to the whole safety team. Another great presentation. We always look forward to them at E&O and really happy with the progress being made. Wanted to say to Mark, congratulations very much. It was fun working with you. I remember you starting at the agency and thought he's got his work cut out for him. And by all means, in short order, we were all happy you were on board and grateful for the progress that you made in the safety programs over the years. Mm-hmm. So you'll get my thanks from the perspective of a coworker. And as a board member, thank you for setting us up in the future to continue the programs in capable hands. So happy retirement, Mark.
Thank you so much. And good working with you as well. And I remember a story you told years ago about a bike ride you went on. And I'm looking forward to taking some bike rides myself in retirement. So thank you so much. And again, good working with you as well. I had many fond memories working with you.
Thanks. Happy pedaling.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Director Ford. And thank you, Mark, for your response. Go to Director Atkins.
Mark Passamani, I've admired your work as a colleague in the health and safety industry. You are the consummate professional, and I've watched you not only take over the reins of the health and safety program at what became SCB Water, but take it to a whole new level, and then bring on Jose and Aaron, and what I've watched them develop. I remember some of the first presentations, and now they are falling right in line, and we've got a truly professional staff. We're really, really prepared, and I'm so thankful that you were selected to take the reins. So congratulations on your retirement. Well done. Well deserved.
Thank you so much. And again, I second that with Joe and Aaron. I think they're going to take us to even a higher level. They have the energy, the knowledge to move us even further. So I feel good about that. And thank you so much for your comments.
Very good. Director Ozahowski, go ahead.
Yeah, emergency management and emergency procedures, it's a tall order, but it needs to be done. And as some of you may know, I work for a cruise line company, and we have a whole department dedicated just for communications and emergency preparedness. Mr. Diaz, I need to check with my legal department and senior executives, but I would like, if you want to, extend an invitation to you and your team to visit our emergency response center here in Santa Clarita, and just to give you a glimpse of how we respond to emergencies, who our incident commanders is, and how we deal with emergencies. It's not the same as a water agency, but I'm a firm believer that any data, any good info is good info, and that might help you develop the plan. It's not going to happen anytime soon. You know, we do have COVID restrictions, but hopefully sometime this year. I also have a question to Mr. Southard regarding security cameras. Do we have security cameras on any of our infrastructure here in the city, in Santa Clarita Valley? Mr. Southard?
I'm sorry, you broke up a little bit. Could you repeat that question?
Sure. Do we have security cameras installed on any of our facilities in Santa Clarita Valley?
Yes, we do. We have cameras and security cameras at our Rockefeller locations, our Rio Vista locations, and Pine Street locations.
And who do we hire to do risk assessment or placement installation assessment on those cameras? Or do we just choose those locations ourselves?
I actually cannot answer that question. So if that's all right, I'll defer that one to Mr. Passamani.
Yes, we handle that internally. And I know that Chris and his team have been looking at making some upgrades on the security side. Currently, it's, you know, passive in the sense that if there is a security issue or, you know, a theft or a break-in, it's after the fact. I may have to refer to Chris on some of those items, but if there's any other questions related to security and that type of thing. Building and grounds also deals a lot with the maintenance of those cameras. Okay. Chris, is there anything you could share with that? Or
Yeah, I dropped on top of my head. I just saw this last week. We're going through this exercise now, and it's a collaborative effort. It's between safety, buildings and grounds, and now IT. And we have exactly 75 cameras. So we're going through the process of evaluating our properties and we'll be doing a walkthrough shortly just to reassess where we might need new cameras and newer technologies. And we just kicked that off. So actually that was last week. So, so coming soon, you'll hear, we'll bring to you once we go out to bid, and we'll bring back to you, the winner of the bid of our overall camera system upgrade that we're planning to do.
Okay. Well, Mr. Perez, I've had an opportunity to speak with Captain Diaz this afternoon. He is LA County Sheriff's Department, and he informed me that he has a team that's more than willing to work with the agency to do an assessment on camera placement. So if you don't mind, I can put you in touch with Captain Diaz or his SME and see if that helps the agency with placement and installation.
That would be very, very helpful. That perfect timing. Thank you.
Excellent. Excellent. And Mr. Passamani, again, congratulations on your retirement. Maybe we can pull a Dirk Marks on you, but we'll see.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
All right. Back to you, President Martin.
All right. Before I go to Vice President Gladbach, I may have seen Mike Alford's hand raised. Did I see that or did I imagine that?
President Martin, you did. If you don't mind, I'll wait until the end and then I'll add some additional stuff. Thank you.
Oh, very good. Okay. All right. Go ahead, Vice President Gladbach.
Thank you, President Martin. Mark, I'm just recalling the first time you came to a committee meeting and I met you and talked about your goals and so forth. I just want to commend you and Joe and Aaron on the work that you have done and brought, as Bill, Director Cooper said, you brought this agency from where we were to a first class in your area. It's really important. And the sharing a story, when I first met Mark, we were talking and, I'm from Missouri and Mark's father worked at Whiteman Air Force Base in Missouri, which is the home of my favorite plane, the Flying Wing. And we had a nice conversation on that. Mark, I'm sorry to see you leave. You're leaving a great organization for our benefit. It's terrible that you're leaving. For your benefit, I wish you the best. Okay, you deserve it. Okay. And as Bill said, you know when you're retired when you don't know what day it is. So, yeah. So good luck. Thanks for everything you've done. So.
Thank you so much, Director Gladbach. Many fond memories and appreciate your support and connections with Aqua JPIA and many other conversations we've had. I've greatly appreciated that and your advice and guidance. That's been appreciated. Thank you.
Director Orzechowski, did you have something more to say?
Yeah, sorry. Quick question, Mr. Passamani. Back to page 162 in our board packet, page 5 on your presentation, recordable incident status.
Yes.
So now that the agency has peaked above the industry standard, what sort of protocol are you initiating? Or is there a protocol that's being initiated because of that?
Well, I think the main thing we always try to do is evaluate the needs. I mean, I think the spike was a concern. We had a couple of new types of incidents and we adapted fairly quick to those in terms of making modifications and adaptions to those particular incidents. It doesn't put us at any high risk at this point, unless it continues at a high risk. But I think the thing that we've wanted to do is just mainly focus on the training, make sure we're adhering to Cal OSHA compliance, and just pushing forward with incident prevention. So it doesn't kick off any added concern, really, I believe, other than we really need to buckle down and make sure we're compliant.
Okay, thank you. Back to you, President Martin.
All right, very good. Are there any other questions or comments for Mark and his team before I make ask a question and make a comment? All right, I don't see any. I did have a question having to do with the EAPs. I think it was part of Joe's presentation. He said they were going to be made available to the staff through SharePoint, but I'm wondering if are they also going to be made available to members of the board to review and to be familiar with. I don't think we have access to SharePoint as directors, but are they going to be made available in another way to the board?
Yes, actually, the plans will be available at each location. So there'll be folders available at each location, usually by the main exits or by the disaster response kits. So they're available as a folder to evaluate. And if needed, I could share with the board members. I don't think it's a problem. As long as Mike is okay with that, I can share with you. It's a plan that's available for all employees and visitors, so shouldn't be a problem to share that with you.
Yeah, I think I would like to. I would hopeful that we would make available to us in a digital format so that we can, the directors can review them at their leisure and be familiar with them. So, just that's if you can make that happen, that'd be great.
No problem.
And lastly, Mark, I go back a few years with you. I know you. I was on the board when you came on, and safety has been near and dear to my heart. I think I've made that comment a number of times, appreciating what you do and what you've done. Listen, you've created a best-in-class safety organization for our best-in-class water agency. You're a man of professionalism and dedication to your work, and we appreciate it very much. Sorry to see you go, but we certainly wish you the best in your retirement. And please enjoy your time. It's a great time of life. So thank you for what you've done and best wishes.
Thank you so much. I greatly appreciate that, President Martin, and appreciate all your help. I mean, it's been the sport has been very welcome and very much appreciated. And again, I think there's still room for improvement. I'll always say that as long as there's a need. But again, I thank you so much for your support.
Very good. Thank you. And with that, I think we've concluded item 7.
So, yeah, President Martin, if you don't mind.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, thank you.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Chris Perez did cover what I was going to chime in, that it's sort of a three-pronged approach. It's buildings and grounds, it's safety, and it's technology. But in addition to that, I just really wanted to thank Mark for his service and his. It was great getting to know him these last 4 years. We are definitely going to miss him. But something that is not seen, and I want the board to understand and realize this, and I think Mark, Joe, and Aaron do, is they have complete buy-in from operations staff. And that's extremely difficult to do. In a former life, I was a safety person, and operations tends to look at safety as the safety police or a burden. But the way these guys conduct themselves and the culture that they've built, the operations staff doesn't look like that at all. And they really have embraced it. And I just want to make sure everybody understands that, because it is truly important. Because when a true disaster hits, the communication and the organization of operational staff in the field to isolate tanks and shut off valves and fix brakes and things is truly important. So I just wanted to express that. And again, thanks to Mark.
Thank you, Mike. I really appreciate that. And I really enjoy working with you. And you've also helped tremendously with that connection and that support of safety, because, you know, I've been in this field for 30 some years, and some places it is always a cop. But I think when you have that leadership from you, from Matt, from everyone, even back several years ago to Dan Maznada, Valerie Pryor, Harry Mantis, I could go on. And the people we work with really make that easier. Safety is always challenging. And to Director O's comments, we're wanting to get more refined and perfect on those, getting those numbers down. And taken those initiatives. But again, it's really been a pleasure working with everyone. And I thank everyone for their comments and support. Thank you so much.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Mike, for pointing that out. That's a really important point to bring up and certainly an important aspect to the agency. So with that, I think we are complete with item 7, unless there's more to say. We wish you the best, Mark, in your future endeavors. All right, we move on to item 8, update on the Bouquet Creek Restoration Project. And that, our presenter tonight is Mr. Steve Cole. Steve, if you will.
Yes, thank you, President Martin, board members and public. I will be presenting on Bouquet Creek releases. I went back and looked the last time we had this topic before the board, and it was just over a year ago. So we had a request to update again, and so that's what we're here to do tonight. April, go ahead and go to the next slide. I'm going to compress the presentation from the last time. I went pretty in depth on the history and things. Tonight, I'll give a brief overview because I think it's important for those that may have forgotten, or if there's other members of the public that weren't here then. But kind of try and run through this pretty quickly and get to the status update. Next slide, April. Just a reminder where we're at and when we're talking about this, it's Bouquet Canyon. There's a reservoir that is owned and operated by the Department of Water and Power of Los Angeles. And that reservoir releases water down the creek and down below into the canyon. And then there are some wells that have experienced impacts by the lack of release down further in the canyon. Next slide, April. Just a few pictures. This asset has been there a very long time. So the dam began construction in 1932, actually opened in 1934. And there's a couple of pictures of what things look like then. Just a real quick shout out to scvhistory.com. I think I did this last time. For anybody that wants to go and look up history on the Santa Clarita Valley and the surrounding area, it's actually a pretty tremendous resource. They have many different subject matters that you can go on and learn about the community kind of in the past. And I always find it really resourceful. Next slide, April. A little bit about the kind of the contractual history of Bouquet Creek releases. The original contract for the release goes back to 1932. And so the concept behind this is you had a natural water flow down Bouquet Canyon that's collected from rainfall in the watershed and naturally flows down the creek. When you put a dam there, obviously that doesn't happen any longer. And so you generally have contractual arrangements that try to mimic that natural flow and the amounts of that flow so that downstream water users aren't impacted. This agreement was so far back. There wasn't really a local water agency up in the upper watershed at that time. And so the agreement was actually with the Santa Clara Water Conservation District, which is actually a predecessor to United Water Conservation District. So the contractual agreement for that release is still held between Los Angeles Department of Water and Power and the United Water Conservation District. As I mentioned earlier, the reservoir got put in place in 1934 as far as actually in operation. And then there was an update to the contract that happened in 1978, just reflecting some ability to operate it a little bit differently than it historically had been. Next slide, April. So what happened back in the early 2000s? There was a big fire. And then a few years later, we had really big rain. 05 was historical in its amount of rain that fell. That inundated the creek with debris flows, and it caused some issues with being able to release the water, the amount of water that's contractually required. That water has been accumulating really over time. So right now there's probably about 13,000 acre feet of water that is accumulated that has not been released from the reservoir. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, this has some impacts to the groundwater basin, especially the kind of the shallow areas that are just downstream of Bokeh Canyon. And then also it impacts the habitat. You just don't have as much water flowing in that section of the canyon. Next slide, April. So this kind of just gives you a quick visual of what the challenge is. So when too much water is released, it finds itself onto the road. Anybody that travels that road, they understand the safety concern. People drive way too fast on it. It's windy, and having kind of water or moss growing on the road is extreme safety hazard for, you know, the traveling public there. So they just don't release as much water. Next slide, April. And this is what it kind of looks like on a graphic. You can see, you know, and this is just going from the 80s. Obviously, it went back way before that to kind of present day. You kind of see it got really sporadic after the debris flows. I think, you know, in the early, you know, 08, 09, 10, they were kind of fiddling around with still trying to release a lot of water. But from my understanding, they were having some pretty major safety concerns. And so then that's why you see it basically, you know, take a really steep dive off the releases. They've kind of stabilized back up to right at the maximum that they can release without major road issues. And that's why you see it stabilize kind of at the end here in the recent past. Again, from the earlier slide, it's about half. So that's about what they are releasing now, about half of the contractual amount that comes down the canyon. Next slide, April. It's a reminder, I think, you know, like a lot of projects nowadays, the stakeholder list on this one is long, a lot of it too, because you get into the forest. So you've got that aspect that necessarily doesn't happen on some of the other areas as far as stakeholders, but it's pretty much everybody is involved in this project. Makes it really difficult to organize, but go ahead, next slide, April. As far as the current status, so the county Public Works is really the lead agency. They've been the ones that are, you know, trying to move the project along, mainly because of the roadway implications, and then also the flood control aspect of the creek itself. So they've been, you know, doing a lot of work, studies. This project has really kind of had the casualties of starting and stopping. Really tough to find a consistent, you know, movement forward on the project. A lot of the focus has been on the actual creek restoration. The county has tried to move forward kind of a quick start project, but I'll talk about that a little bit later. Assembly Bill 353 was actually passed, which is a pretty key piece of legislation. It deals with the ability to take permits for endangered species, which this stretch has been identified as a suitable habitat for the three-spine stickleback. So that legislation allowed, as long as you did things a certain way, the ability to get permits to do improvements. And a lot of that revolves around how to restore the creek itself. The county does have consultants. They are moving forward with kind of the full project design, is my understanding. 2018, LADWP filed water rights application. So a little bit interesting piece. The state Water Resources Control Board started getting after LEDWP because of the stored water. You actually have to have a permit to do that. And so they started pushing on LEDWP to apply for that permit. So this is the water that should have been released that wasn't, that 13,000 acre feet roughly that I mentioned earlier. Technically, you need a permit to hold that water for future release, and that's what they're moving forward with now. It's a pretty long process to get through, so it's going to be a little bit while on that. Most recently, I just wanted to mention, this is kind of getting to the full update now of the more recent activities. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife play a really key role in this project, mainly revolving around the Bouquet Creek restoration component. I do want to say that they have been providing some leadership to actually try and move things forward that has been helpful. And that has happened basically the first part of this year. There was a meeting held between many of those stakeholders you saw earlier. And the main focus was on this one was mainly the project proponent and the regulatory community. We were a partner in that as well, and sitting and walking through that. CDFW is interested in trying to bring some Wildlife Conservation Board funds to the table. There are substantial funds for these styles of projects. And so the meeting really revolved around that, where CDFW was communicating that they would like the County of Los Angeles to move forward with a project. It was made clear in that meeting that the interim solution is not one that CDFW is supportive of. And they made that very clear, which I think was actually probably a good step because it provided clarity of what they would be in favor of. And so that was communicated to LA County Public Works. There were some good exchanges there. And really the focus now is trying to get the full project into a status that it's project ready or shovel ready so that you can go and actually apply for funds. So that it's kind of the new update where that sits as recently as just about a month ago. Next slide, April. Just a few things about our role, you know, that we're trying to play in this. I view it as kind of facilitation. So CDFW had reached out to us kind of in that role as well. And so we're making ourselves available to try to help move things forward. We did get to take a field trip up the canyon to see kind of the current condition. I recommend that for everybody to take a quick trip up Bouquet Canyon. It's an amazing resource and you can just tell it's been neglected. I mean, that's the only thing I'd say about it. It needs help. But I mean, as far as an asset that's really close to this community, that is a really neat place. Take a quick trip up there if you haven't done it and look around. One of the things that shocked me was the yellow iris issue. I did not know that. I was thinking Arundo the whole time. It is really a yellow iris infestation issue. And if you haven't ever seen kind of yellow iris take over a water body, you can go take a look up there. And it's something that's going to have to be really dealt with and managed. Much like Arundo, but you have to remove it. It's invasive and it's prolific. We are talking with the United Water Conservation District about the existing contract. There's some interest in about, you know, who is best situated to hold that contract now. You know, obviously that reservoir discharges directly into our watershed and our groundwater basin. So there's some early discussions about what is the best way to handle that for the future. But I just want to put that on your radar that we're actively talking with United about that. And then I see our role in trying to assist with advocating for funding. This project aligns with a lot of the things that we want to see move forward, whether it's on the Groundwater Sustainability Agency side or just our support of the mission of having a healthy watershed. So with that, I'll stop and be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Cole, for the presentation. Excellent. April, do we have any public comment on Mr. Cole's presentation?
We do not.
Very good. Then we can open it up to any board questions. Does anybody have anything they'd like to ask Mr. Cole about his presentation? Director Ozahowski.
Thank you for the presentation, Mr. Cole. I want to hear more from Director Atkins on how does he feel about this presentation and how does he think we should move forward with this? So that's it. Back to you, President Martin.
Go ahead, Director Atkins.
Thank you, President Martin. I'm excited by the progress so far and the willingness for the CDFW to lead the effort and basically bring these stakeholders together and move the whole process forward. And their articulation of how they want to see the entire project completed. And what I've been working on is the process of getting maybe some non-governmental organization to take over the maintenance of this, or at least assist the Angeles National Forest with the maintenance, because there's a need to get the entire drainage restored, but then we're going to have to maintain it. And that's I think, a role that can be done as a public-private partnership, possibly. So I'm excited about the whole prospect. I'm excited to see the project, the progress that has been made so far. And that was new to me about the United Water Conservation District even considering changing contract holders and so on. There might be some wisdom there, but I'm just energized by what's going on. If that answers your question, Director Ozahowski.
Thank you, Director Atkins. Are there any other questions or comments from the board for Mr. Cole? Director Armitage.
Thank you. I'll just say that I'm glad that you added the piece about talking with United Water Conservation District about possibly reworking the contract, since to me that this is affecting the groundwater recharge in our service area. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would say that's a first. You know, we're the closest to the regional point of discharge for the creek. Obviously, you know, I think you could make a case that that drop of water finds its way down through our basin. We use it. We probably discharge it again, use it again, discharge it again, and then eventually it makes its way down through the watershed. I think it's fair to say, you know, we're kind of first in line with that now, and having kind of a direct relationship with the community that's directly impacted by the lack of discharges.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you. Unless there's any further discussion, I think it's time we can move on to item 9. Thank you, Mr. Cole, for your presentation and the update.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cole.
Item 9, this is the General Manager's Report on Activities, Projects, and Programs. Mr. Stone.
Okay, very good. Let me get my camera on there. I just realized I'm not on. Here we go. I've got a little bit of a longer report tonight, so I will try to get through it expeditiously, and then happy to address any follow-up comments or questions. So first, I wanted to thank, in addition to Mark, who deservedly got some extra thanks, I wanted to thank all of our staff tonight who presented items to the board. And I was just reflecting that it's a testament to the kind of growing and developing capabilities of the organization that we can have so many different staff come in and you know, from Matt to Kathy to Chris to Mark and Steve and I probably missed somebody, but you know, it's just great to see that, you know, ideally as a manager, you want to try to develop the staff who can carry a piece of the load, you know, while working, coordinating with everybody else. And it's just nice to see that happen. The best kind of meeting is the meeting where I don't have to talk. So that means things are running well. So my thanks to them. And I'll just say over the last 6 weeks, kind of jumping into a list of different things, I've completed one-on-one meetings with about half the board now, where April's keeping me highly scheduled to try to get through those quickly and get more cycles in. I got to say, I really enjoyed the opportunity to discuss, you know, each board member's thoughts and questions. It's been a mix of some of our new directors and some of our longest serving directors. So it's kind of nice to get, you know, different checkpoints on things and talk through areas of interest and in a more informal context. We certainly bring a lot of material ultimately through the board for group action, but it's nice to kind of hear from people individually about their concerns. It helps me, I know, in trying to shape the best way to bring things forward on the agenda. As you no doubt noticed, if you're following the written departmental reports, staff is quite busy with projects and initiatives to advance the agency's strategic objectives. And rather than list all of them here, I would just encourage you, I know there's a lot of reading, but if you have a chance to go through those departmental reports, you'll find quite a lot of material about what's going on at the departmental level. On many fronts, and you know, I'll try to highlight one or two of them as we go here, as it seems appropriate. As we deliver these GM reports. Notwithstanding that, we are, as a management team, we're continuing to work through an effort to evaluate organizational needs over the next 3 to 5 years. It's no magic to that time frame. It's more just look out past your nose, you know, look out past next week or next year. It's not a matter of what position we have to fill next week or even what positions are going to be, you know, potentially in a budget request next year. It's really trying to look a little bit deeper and further into the future to think about those things. So what kind of trends do we see? Where are we in the development of the capabilities in each department? What challenges do we think are continuing to emerge or that we're going to be facing? And are we equipped for those with the right configuration of positions and the right personnel? Succession planning is obviously a piece of that as well. I think somebody coined a new term of pulling a Dirk Marks as one succession planning strategy to help bridge transition. So Dirk can add that to his resume of things named after him. So I'm really looking forward to bringing some insights on that effort back to the board once we've completed work on the issue. And in my view, I don't view that as something that's going to be like a class and comp study that's 300 pages. It's going to be more of a strategic plan flavor, you know, overview. Here are the big drivers. Here are some of the considerations in each department. Here's where we sort of are now organizationally, and this is what we think we may evolve to over some period of time. And then, you know, year to year, we can address within a budget and other priorities how fast we need to move in that direction. So just to kind of set some expectations. I think for many of you, it'll come as good news that it won't be a full class and comp study to have to read. But I do appreciate the efforts of our staff while still being busy to kind of focus this issue so we can hopefully get something across the finish line of this year for the board to look at. Shifting over to COVID-19, a lot of areas to update there. Most of that we know about. We were living through it in our daily lives. At the end of 2021, we had 42 cases to date over the entire pandemic recorded among our staff, and probably a chunk of those were just in December. From January 1st to now, we've had an additional 44 cases. That just kind of gives you an idea of the level of contagion of Omicron, for a total of 86. During that peak period in January, we actually had 3 weeks with more than 10 cases of staff calling in, finding out they were COVID positive, and even more than that, on watch, because a family member had come down positive, and some of those ultimately did also contract COVID. And for that, I just want to, again, another kudo to Mark, to acknowledge our safety staff and our HR staff who really took the brunt of that during that time of contact tracing, reporting. When we were getting one or two cases a week, it was one level of effort. When we got, 33 cases in 3 weeks, it was pretty crazy. And Mark, I think both HR and safety actually had a staff member or two, out for a short period with COVID as well. We won't be specific about anybody's names or anything like that, but just, it was across the organization that we were seeing those impacts. I think the good news is our strategy of sending our flexible workplace staff home probably paid some dividends, because we didn't seem to have a lot of, issues with potential workplace transmission. So sometimes the contact tracing was as easy as I'm working from home. I haven't been in the office in 2 weeks. So no possible work contacts there. As of today, better news. More recently, we're down to about 1 to 2 cases a week, and the county level, we've seen a pretty good fall off from the peaks when we were having as many as trying to remember what those numbers were. Can't remember if they're in the 20,000s or the 40,000s now, but we're down to about 2,200, 2,500 cases the last couple of days. The test positivity has fallen from a high of, I think it was 22 or 23%, down to about 3%. And if this trend, which has been a trend for about a month now, continues, I'm hoping we're going to start to get back to the late fall lows that we had before Omicron arrived. And my personal benchmark, I just kind of keep in my mind, is about 1,000 cases a day in LA County, or about a 1%. Positivity rate is when things seem to start to feel a lot more safe. As I mentioned, we shifted staff to flexible work, from flexible work schedules to full-time work at home for those who could. And with the drop in numbers, we'll be transitioning them back. So right now, our thought is we want to see another week or so of numbers here post Super Bowl, make sure we don't have a celebratory bounce there. And if that's the case, we will ask staff to begin transitioning back in March and to be fully back by April 1st, and to work with their individual supervisors on kind of a game plan for that. So, fingers crossed, as we've done on prior waves, we cross our fingers and hope that we won't get a resurgence of something new or different. Final thing on COVID, we did, legislation was passed in Sacramento this past week on an urgency basis under SB 114, which will provide up to 80 hours of COVID-related leave. This may sound like a Groundhog Day moment, as I think we went through this last year, where the board had approved using any leftover, or I guess at that point they refilled the COVID leave. This year, we are using any leftover EAL or COVID leave And the good news on that is I think we could just dovetail this requirement in. It is retroactive to January 1st, and we'll bring a conforming adjustment to our policy to the board in March, similar to what we did last year. We won't be asking for any global refill of leave, but we will have to comply with any mandated leave. But for those employees who utilize EAL, we will have already covered that obligation through that. It would only affect those employees who had to use their own personal leave above and beyond the EAL that was available. Let's see. In other activities, one of the things that the board may or may not know is as general manager, a couple of years ago, I was asked to participate as an appointed member of the Measure W Scoring Committee. So that was Supervisor Barger's office approached to see whether I would be interested in that. I think we formerly had Dean, for those of you who know and remember Dean, he was appointed to that for a bit and then had to step back due to some health issues. So I've been on that committee. It meets kind of from early fall through spring. It meets fairly regularly and goes through a process of scoring upwards of 50 to 70 different Measure W project funding proposals. And my role on the committee is as kind of the water supply points person. So they've sort of divvied out categories and have people with certain expertise on the committee. We also discuss things as a committee when we vote to approve an overall score being forwarded to the regional oversight committee for final action. But that's been an interesting process. It does take some time, but I think it's been, you know, valuable for me to kind of become more acquainted with that whole Measure W system, as well as provide some contribution back to the overall county committee or community. So in the back of my mind is when we return to in-person meetings, will I have enough time to do that many meetings and add the commute time, which essentially is going to double the time commitment. So yay for remote meetings. But unfortunately, with the Brown Act, we won't be able to do that. So I continue to also participate with the board and State Water Contractors organization. And we recently had our board strategic planning session to update and reflect on that organization's progress. The state contractors is essentially a group of the contracting entities, and it evolved over the years to try to provide technical analysis and assistance to the members on the contract issues, as well as more direct and ongoing development of capacity and knowledge for issues with interfacing with DWR and regulators on the regulation of the project activities. So I would just reflect, I think it's been a huge value to the participants to have sort of a pooled set of resources and what's a relatively small but highly technically developed staff in that organization. And two key things I would note that have been successful over the last few years. We have a really capable executive director, Jennifer Pierre, and I think our board, even with kind of people coming on and off it from the various member agencies, has done an admirable job of kind of navigating through some of these challenges we've had. One thing I would note is just, you know, those same transition and succession issues are playing out in that organization. And I've been really impressed with a couple of very good hires there to replace key staff that have been there for a long time, and gives us the same kind of concerns that you have when, you know, someone of Dirk or Mark's tenure and caliber move on to retirement. So we've been fortunate to be able to successfully recruit for replacement and you know, sometimes changing in our approach as needs change along with that. One key thing that the organization's done over the last several years, it's kind of an under the radar thing, is really shifted or added to their focus a more well-developed and managed science program. So the State Water Contractors fund several million dollars of science every year, you know, related to either permit obligations or just initiatives to try to better understand what's happening with that ecosystem, what are the key drivers, what advances can be made in monitoring the location, the life cycle, what are the critical factors contributing to viability or lack of viability of sensitive species of concern. And a couple of years ago, the determination was made to actually hire a science manager and organize that as a specific budget within our budget at the State Contractors. And they've also put on some workshops that include the regulators to see the kind of work that we're funding, kind of get a little more visibility for what we're doing, and hopefully develop more credibility in that process, I think is one you know, blunt way to put it. I see it's bearing some fruit and hopefully will more as we go through some of these updates of our permits. It's really important that, you know, our ethos has been that we want to do the science and we want to really learn from it. And if the science takes us in a way that's beneficial for permit conditions, that's good and hope for. But also if it teaches us things that we're not really thrilled to know, we're better off knowing it, because then we can address it with more credibility with the regulators, having done some of that science or funded some of that science. Shifting away to another area of activity, tomorrow the Urban Water Institute Spring Conference begins, and that was another hoped-for in-person meeting in Palm Springs. We had to kind of quickly retool that back to a Zoom webinar with Omicron, and I just found out this morning I'll be moderating the panel tomorrow because we had somebody go out ill, and so for those of you attending, I will be your surprise monitor for the afternoon panel on the State Water Project, or moderator. That should be an interesting discussion. We're going to hear from State Water Project Deputy Director on the allocations and some of the issues last year and this year, as well as hear from a couple of not usual people that you might see at these panels. We've got a farmer from the Central Valley and kind of their take on it as an actual operating farmer. And then an agency manager in Ventura County, which is kind of a sub-agency, if you will, of our member agency at Metropolitan. So I'm going to get a little different perspective there on sort of downstream, further downstream impacts. Sorry, a couple more. A follow-up item, as you may recall, the board approved an amendment to the deposit and funding agreement related to the Tapia annexation proposal last December. And among other things, that agreement requires payment of certain costs related to the proposed supply of water that the agency has acquired for that potential annexation, and establishes what portions of those payments would be non-refundable. That amendment updated the timeline and helped clarify also what happens to the water and the money should the agreement or should the development not go forward. Or Tapia failed to make scheduled progress payments over the next couple of years. So I can report that Tapia has executed that agreement and has sent the required initial payment to the agency for the beginning of this year. So I know that some of the directors were probably curious about what ultimately happened with that, and just wanted to report out on that. Again, whether the proposed development ultimately goes forward is a determination that's made through the county's environmental review and land development approval processes. So just to alleviate any confusion about the agency's role there. But if water service is required under annexation policy, they need to be providing a water supply. And this funding agreement helps pay for that. With regard to the disc golf reconfiguration concept that came up in written public comment and verbal comment tonight, just point out the bulk of this process appropriately is taking place through the city with their staff and their park planning process. So, you know, the actual development of the plan, the timing of any improvements are really hinged on that process and budget availability with the city. There are some aspects of the proposal which touch on items that we are interested in as the leaseholder. And those would be things such as the request to relocate or replace perimeter fencing, making adjustments in the lease area to conform to that, any safety and security considerations that we would want recognized in the lease terms, and a few other site-related considerations as they proceed to do planning, such as erosion control, and assurance that they'll get environmental compliance through the city. And we're kind of working through those at the staff level. So most of our involvement isn't directly related to the disc golf community. It's related to just making sure whatever proposal the city and its constituents put forward is compatible with any lease terms that we would bring back to the board. I guess the other point I would just make, and I think I've mentioned this before, there are other lease amendment issues that will probably be appropriate to address on other issues. And thinking for some time has been if we do another amendment to the lease, we would just wrap everything in and do it once rather than bring, you know, three or four different lease amendments over time. And so there are likely to be a few similar kind of adjustments for the final configuration of the park expansion, a request to make some adjustments in the area that they're using for storage yard and equipment yard there, as well as just any general cleanup on liability language and that type of thing. So our new property manager and Courtney, among others, are kind of working at the staff level through a kind of a punch list of those items. So hopefully that gives the board some idea, you know, that there is an activity taking place. And certainly when we get to a point where we have a proposal for some changes in the lease and a staff report supporting that, we'll bring that back through the appropriate standing committee and then to the board. Okay, finally, last paragraph. Our budgeting process will be starting soon. I know, and in fact, it probably has started. Rochelle is already reaching out to key department staff management to begin the preparations. And, you know, I guess a couple things that I anticipate, we won't know the magnitude till we start through this process, but we all know that over the last year, supply chain and energy and other inflationary factors have started coming up in our day-to-day operational management. And that includes here at the agency. So, I mean, for example, some of our treatment chemicals on renewal of contract bids have come up much higher. And, you know, we've taken a kind of an in-the-moment look at some of those just to see, you know, how big of an impact it is. Fortunately, you know, it's a significant increase to a relatively small portion of our cost for those items. But we'll see what the overall effect of all of those inflationary pressures are. We're also seeing some construction costs coming in higher as well. I think you've noticed that on some recent bid awards. And then finally, the CPI data, which has some relation to what we bring to the board annually for cost of living adjustment consideration, that's significantly up in the second half of 2021. And that item comes back to the board as a discrete discretionary action. So the board does have full discretion on what to do with that. But we'll be bringing that information coming up in the next few months to start that process. I was trying to think of silver linings, if there are any. I think the one anticipated silver lining might be that if the Fed is increasing interest rates, we might start to earn more than a penny or two on our large cash reserve. But whether that offsets these other pressures, we'll have to run it through the budget, you know, model and see what that looks like. But we might see some modest improvement in our cash reserve earnings that may at least partially offset some of those pressures. So just wanted to kind of, again, give a little preview of a couple of those things for the board in the GM report. No ask for any policy discussion or decisions tonight. It's more just kind of giving you the movie trailer. And then, you know, we'll have the movie later when we come back through the process. So thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Stone, for a lengthy and comprehensive report. Appreciate it. Madam Secretary, do we have any public comment on Mr. Stone's report?
We do not.
Very good. We can go to board questions, and I would ask the board to be respectful of the time remaining that we have tonight. If you can, be brief. Do we have any questions or follow-up for Mr. Stone? Excellent. I think that's the best thing.
The 9:30 rule is working. Yeah.
I know. I would like to try to get through the rest of the agenda if we can. So with that, we can move on to item 10, committee meeting recap reports for informational purposes only. You have two of those reports in your packet. Are there any questions or information that you, or does the chair wish to add anything to the written reports? Director Ozahosky, go ahead.
I have a question regarding 10.1, but it's for operations. If you turn to page 85, two-thirds down, notice on the credit card charges, a tool was bought from Harbor Freight. And I have to be really careful how I raise the question. So my question for operations, whether it's for Mr. Alvord or Mr. Abercrombie. So for engineering, for construction, you know, when you're purchasing any sort of materials, there's specific material properties, and those have to be purchased and installed. I'm not sure about operations. When replacing a part on any of our infrastructure, I assume that it's an equivalent or better material than was on the plans. Is that a correct assumption? Is Mr. Alvord with us, or Mr. Abercrombie?
I don't see either one right now.
If not, what I'd offer is, I think you may have asked two different questions on replacing parts and equipment within our facilities. Yes, I think we would try to use equipment that is appropriate for use, and if it's in contact with water, it also has to be NSF approved. As far as buying a tool, I think that receipt may have been related to purchasing some kind of tool, and I can certainly ask operations to give a little more insight into that process if that would be helpful.
That's okay, Mr. Stone. I'll contact Mr. Abercrombie or Mr. Albert via email.
Okay.
I just want to make sure that we use tools that have proper material properties in order to prevent any harm or any incidents. If you understand what I'm getting at,
I totally get it. Yes, you don't want some cheap tool breaking and then causing an injury while you're using it.
Correct, but again, I don't want to micromanage the team. I just wanted to make that known at this board meeting.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Stone, and back to you, President Martin.
Thank you, Director Ozahosky. If we have no further questions, April, I guess I already asked you about public comment. We have any public comment on item 10? I suppose I didn't ask that.
There is no public comment.
Very good. We can move to item 11, President's report. First up under the president's report is item 11.1, which is the February 2, 2022 ad hoc remote attendance board policy committee meeting report. As you recall, back in December, when Director Colley brought an item to the board for consideration, the board directed us to assign an ad hoc committee to look further into the existing policy and decide whether there were any changes necessary to be made. And so I did form an ad hoc committee with, and my logic on the membership was I wanted two new directors and two directors on the committee that were familiar with the background and history of the current policy. So Director Armitage, Director Bronstein, Director Cooper, and Vice President Gladbach were on the committee. And I chaired the committee, and we did meet on February 2 to discuss both the existing policy and the proposed policy change that Director Colley presented at the December 7th meeting. And we do have a board report in your packet. I'm not going to go through the entire board report. It essentially provides some background information and summarizes what the committee concluded after meeting for a period of time. That one meeting went through the background, went through the previous board's preference on having directors attend in person. And as worded in the board report that was prepared by Mr. Byrne and Mr. Bunn, I will quote from it: the ad hoc committee unanimously agreed to recommend certain clarifying edits to the existing policy. Pardon me. But there was also unanimous opinion that the board prefers directors to attend in person and did not support the proposed program change, policy change that Director Colley presented. But in fairness to Director Colley and what we committed to do in December 7th, we brought both of those changes to the board. We brought the proposed change to the existing policy, which is the minor edit that basically explained that it was not intended to solicit information about why a director cannot attend the meeting, but rather why a director feels it's important that they participate by teleconference rather than not attending. And so you have in your packet the draft change to the existing policy. You have in your packet the item from the December 7th meeting that Director Colley presented for board consideration. And so the unanimous consensus amongst the ad hoc committee is that they supported the minor edits to the existing policy as opposed to the broader change to the policy as submitted by Director Colley. But as worded in the report, and Mr. Byrne, feel free to weigh in any way you'd like at this point. The recommendation is for the board of directors to discuss the board policy on director attendance by teleconference and the two proposed amendments and consider whether to take action to amend the policy or not. So that is what is before the board tonight. The proposed amendment to the existing policy, which one is called Attachment 1 and one is called Attachment 2. Attachment 1 is the change that came out of ad hoc, and Attachment 2 is the proposed change that was submitted by Director Colley. And so with that, I will ask Madam Secretary, do we have a public comment on the item as I presented it?
It does not appear so.
Mr. Byrne, do you have anything you want to add to this before we open it for board discussion?
No, I have nothing further, President Martin. Great summary.
Thank you very much. And with that, I see a hand raised by Director Kelly. Go ahead, sir.
I just wanted to clarify the definition of teleconference. In the past, it was when we call in, but now, based on conversation earlier tonight, it sounds like our ability to call in still continues to have the option of Zoom. So does the word teleconference still cover phone call as well as Zoom as well as Team? And should we put some kind of a definition in there? That's the only question I have.
Joe, do you want to respond to that? Go ahead.
Yeah, it does cover all that, Director Kelly, and that's the word that's used in the Brown Act. So I think it's the appropriate word to be used in the policy. That was the thinking. But the thought is that it covers all types of remote participation mechanisms.
All right, thank you.
Very good. Director Planbeck.
I'm concerned and confused about why this is an action item but presented under the president's report. I don't really think that's fair to the public because they may have comments but not realize that I didn't know that we intended to take a vote when it's under the president's report. I thought this was just being presented for future consideration at the next board meeting. And, you know, I would like to actually see it on an agenda under an action item. I don't think action items belong under the president's report. That's my comment.
All right. Can you respond to that, Mr. Byrne?
Sure. I think it's agendized in such a way that if you read it, it's clear that there's potential for action being taken as well as the staff reports as well. I think maybe part of the thought process was that President Martin was the chair of the ad hoc committee and he was reporting out. It's obviously
Reporting out is one thing. Taking a vote on something when it's not listed as an action item is another.
Yeah, I mean, we have often in our agenda had items that are listed individually for action that are separate from kind of the more generic action items, but it's something that the board could discuss if it likes. Again, the staff report, I thought was pretty clear that that was what was going to be taking place, but
yeah. I thought the staff report was clear. Director Bronstein.
I was just going to say that if you read just the snippet about it, it says discuss and consider amending the board policy. And we've had Vice President Gladbach present items under director reports that were action items that we voted on. So I don't see it as misleading.
Thank you, Director Bronstein. I agree with that. Director Planbeck, you have another comment.
Yeah, then I would like to support Director Colley's suggestion that there be limits on how many meetings that a particular director can attend remotely. I think it's, if one or two directors are attending everything remotely, it eliminates the option for anybody else to do that. And I don't think that's really fair either. So I think there should be a limit on it.
Okay, well, let me, before I go to Director Bronstein, let me remind the board that the existing policy provides a mechanism for directors to attend by teleconference. It always has been. It always has provided that mechanism. And there's no limits. It's simply that the discretion of the board or the board president, depending on how it's requested. And so that probably is consistent with what you're saying about the recommended minor change to the board policy. I think is more consistent with what you'd like to see, but that's my opinion. Director Cooper.
Thank you, President Martin. And I think in answer to your question too, Lynn, is what the committee came up with is the directors need to attend in person. That's our job. That's what we were elected to do. And we expect directors to be there. Unless there is some very important issue that a director feels that they need to be there. Not the standard business stuff, none of the standard action items that we do. But if there's a big item that a director can't be at a meeting and feels they need to be there for something, then they have to get board approval. So it would be a rare instance when the board would allow that to happen. It's not just a standard procedure to ask and get it. That's the way we had looked at it.
Director Bronstein.
Thank you. I was just going to echo what Director Cooper just said. It was a misunderstanding. I originally, when I got to the ad hoc committee, also misunderstood. It's not about how many times people can show. The general baseline is that you can choose to show up or not to show up as a board member to the board meetings. If you choose not to show up to a board meeting, then you have to ask, you have to convince the board, I guess, why you should be allowed to attend remotely. It's not, you know, it's not that we're allowing people to just, the idea is for all of us to be there together.
So now there's also, let me just insert this before I go back to Director Cooper. There's also the aspect that if we know directors' travel plans and their ability, their intention to perhaps not be in a meeting, and we see on the agenda planning and all the committee calendars that there's going to be a critical item coming before the board, the president, either me or the future president or any president, can request a director to attend by teleconference if, in fact, that item warrants full attendance by the board. So there is that mechanism. It doesn't always have to come to the board for approval. I just wanted to say that to show that there are various ways that directors can be approved to attend by teleconference. Director Cooper, go ahead.
And just a last little comment is, Board Secretary April gives us a calendar a year in advance of all the board meetings, the standard committee meeting days, and everybody plans their vacations around those. All of us have done that for years and years. And there's times when you can't make a board meeting, you miss it. That's just the way it goes. But our discussions where we really believe that there should be very, very few instances where somebody is needed at a board meeting. It have to be something very exceptional to do that.
All right. Well, I do respect Director Planbeck's thoughts on how it was agendized, but I think it was agendized clearly with full approval by legal counsel. And I think board members are familiar with the issues at hand. And I would like to know what the board's pleasure is on moving tonight. Is there a sentiment to make a motion on either one of the two options?
I was going to make a motion, but it's okay.
No, you go ahead, Beth, please.
Okay, I'll make a motion to amend to the ad hoc recommendations.
Which would be
second Director Bronson's motion.
The attachment one option, as it's identified. So we have a motion and a second. Director Kelly, you have your hand raised.
I did have it raised. I was going to make the motion, so I'll be glad to vote in favor of the motion.
All right, we have a motion and a second. If there's no further discussion, Madam Secretary, can you call the roll?
All directors, please unmute your lines. As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Ford.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Planbeck.
Yes, but I wish in the future we could agendize these items as action items.
Noted.
Director Osahofsky.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Atkins.
Yes.
Director Colley.
No.
Director Kelly.
Yes.
Vice President Gladbach.
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
This item passes. Thank you.
And with that, I'd like to thank the ad hoc committee for their thoughtful participation in this item, and thank legal counsel, both Mr. Bunn and Mr. Byrne, for their assistance and guidance. And lastly, thank you, April, for attending also and helping us out. So with that, we can move on to the balance of the items on the president's report. I will try to be quick. There's update on several meetings that are coming up. Mr. Stone already mentioned the Urban Water Institute, which is starting tomorrow and going through the next day, the 16th and 17th. It's virtual. The SCV Chamber 99th Annual Awards and Installation Dinner is scheduled for March 18th, 2022, 6 p.m. at Valencia Hyatt. The Aqua 2022 Spring Conference is being held in Sacramento, at least for the time being, May 3rd to May 5th. Please let the board secretary know if you're interested in attending any of these events. I'm not sure that you can still attend the Urban Water Institute Conference, but you can try. Upcoming virtual meetings, the next regular board meeting will be March 1st, 2022 at 6:30. Virtual committee meetings coming up, the March 3rd, Engineering and Operations, the March 9th, Water Resources and Watershed, the March 17th, Public Outreach and Legislative Committee, and the March 23rd, 2022 Finance and Administration Committee meeting. Just a reminder that the agency will be closed on February 21st in observance of President's Day. And on a side note, please complete your Form 700 annual filing. They are due by April 1st. You would have received notice to file electronically the first week in January. We do have two brief meetings following tonight. The SCV Water Regular be following our meeting will be the a meeting on the Upper Santa Clara Valley JPA regular board meeting. Members are Director Colley, Ford, Mortensen, and myself. There will also be an annual financing corporation meeting following the USC. The JPA meeting and members of the financing corporation are directors Cooper, Gladbeck, Mortensen, and myself, as well as executive director Stone. Do we have any public comment, April, on the president's report, item 11?
We do not.
Very good. Item 12, AB 1234 reports. There are several in your packet. Do we have any other AB 1234 reports tonight? Director Cooper.
Yes, just very quickly, I've got four. February 3rd, along with Director Gladbeck, attended the Aqua workshop. February 4th, attended the Aqua board meeting, both virtual. On February 7th, a one-on-one with General Manager Stone, which was very good, very informative. And then February 10th, the Region 8 board meeting. This is our first meeting for the year. We're starting to set the agenda. There'll be a Region 8 event that we'll put on, looks like August 12th. I'm not sure exactly where it's going to be, where it'll be held, but it'll be August 12th. So you might want to stick that on your calendar if you can. And then we have an hour and a half program that we have to put on at the fall conference. And so we're working on that as well. And that's all. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Director Cooper. Director Ford.
Yes, I also had a Teams meeting with General Manager Stone on February the 14th, largely discussed water supply and water resources issues and a few other miscellaneous items. Very productive. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Any other AB 1234 reports tonight? Seeing none. Oh, I see. Director Armitage, you got your hand up. Go ahead.
I don't have an additional report. I just wanted to say that I especially appreciated the written report by Vice President Gladbeck and was wondering if perhaps our board would also benefit from the same workshop that he described in his written report. So thank you.
Jerry?
Get it off the mute. I think it would be good. I thought of that at that time, Director Armitage. And if you recognize the facilitator was the same one we use, you know, with our performance evaluation. He did a good job. I think my thought was get Director Cooper's approach on it too. It really shows how to work together as a team. One of the big things that they talked about, he pushed for, was for directors, or in our case, directors, to really feel open about commenting on things when you feel you may be in one of 11 having that comment. You're a minority. I think based on our discussion that we've had for the last year, I don't think we need it that way. So, no, I mean, I commend everybody because it is important, because I've been in meetings, and you may be surprised at this, that I feel handcuffed or, you know, a lock on my mouth, that I'm afraid to speak up because of the atmosphere and the tension. So let Director Cooper comment.
You know, using Mitch for this, in fact, that's where we got Mitch, was I attended a workshop in Sacramento a few years back, and he's just very good. We were hoping that we could put something together later on this year in person, rather than having to do it virtually, where you can break up into groups a little easier and put some things together. So yes, I think Kathy, that would be a good recommendation for the board to do that. Team building amongst the board, I think, is really important.
Yeah. And I agree, from the team building standpoint, it's really great. I don't think we need him to show us how to speak up.
So. No, but team building would be excellent. Yes.
Oh, yeah. That. And he's good.
Yeah. All right. Are there any other AB 1234s to report on tonight? I think I already asked about public comment, April, but if I didn't, are there any public comments out there?
There is not.
All right, then we have item 13 and 14 have been pulled. Well, 13's been pulled, and there's no need for 14 as a result of that. We can move to item 15, director requests for future agenda items. Do we have any requests for future agenda items? Director Armitage.
Thank you. So one of the agenda items in the packet that I was reviewing in preparation reminded me that we as board members are asked to vote on exemptions from CEQA. And it made me realize that I feel like I need more information to be better informed at that. So I'm wondering if perhaps sometime in the future when we can squeeze it in, or maybe it's just something for the new board members. I don't know how we would want to approach it, but I would like more information on CEQA as it pertains to the types of projects that we approve and kind of the categories of exemptions, so that we can become more familiar with that and become more comfortable with those types of votes. Thanks.
I think Director Ford could teach that class. Are there any other, Director Colley, go ahead. Director Colley?
Sorry, I thought I unmuted myself. Did not, apparently. Yeah, there was a discussion a few months ago, I think, briefly about the possibility of adding an additional board meeting and something like a training session on CEQA. There is a million things that we ought to be doing that we can't be doing or we're not doing because our meetings tend to run very long. Can we add another agenda item then to discuss the possibility of adding a third meeting? Because I don't think there's been any progress made on that possibility. So thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Any other requests for future agenda items? All right. Seeing none, I think that brings us to item 16, adjournment, and we don't need
President
to vote
Martin,
on it.
We do yes. have a public comment. Did you want to take that?
Oh, please, yes, of course.
Okay, just one moment. Ms. Noltmeyer, please hit star 6 and you may begin your public comment. Ms. Noltmeyer?
Yes, Cam Noltmeyer. Yes, I have been sitting through all this long, what you call a meeting. And I know at the beginning there was a casual comment made about closed session has been canceled. I think you should have at least the decency when it comes up to actually state such. And you don't. You just go over it. Now, that is something that the majority of are interested in, not the other jabber about how important you are and this or that. Because there certainly hasn't been anything that benefits the ratepayers in anything that you do. But you should have at least now had the decency to say, if it is canceled, say it as part of the 13 and get it on the record, please.
Thank you, Ms. Notmeyer. President Martin, did you want to let her know that we did say it several times tonight?
We did say it a number of times early in the meeting and during the meeting and when it came up. So it was mentioned a number of times that item 13 was going to be pulled. Therefore, item 14 was not necessary. So, all right. Is that the extent of the public comment, April?
It is.
Okay, before I adjourn this meeting, I'd like to remind the members of the two other boards that are coming up right after this one. We do have a meeting of the Upper Santa Clara Valley JPA board and then the Finance and Corporation. So, and I think I announced earlier who was on those particular boards. So if you don't mind, could we take a 5-minute break? Stay on this Zoom meeting. This is the platform we're going to use to conduct those meetings, but I think a 5-minute break would help, unless there's not a sentiment for that. Yeah, let's take a 5-minute break. I see 10:15 on my phone. Let's get back at 10:20 if you don't mind.